It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Nathan Olivares, Giles from the Wall Street Journal is here. Stephen Kovac from Bloomberg, from Tech Insider. We got Steve Kovac, a great panel. We'll talk about the end of Yahoo. It's going bye-bye. An internet star who says, give me your Twitter password and I'll give you something special. Would you do it? And Pokemon Go, is it the end of the world? Oliver Stone thinks so. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 572, recorded Sunday, July 24th, 2016. A surplus of bobbleheads. This Week in Tech is brought to you by FrameBridge, the fast, easy, and affordable way to frame the things you love. Visit FrameBridge.com and use the promo code TWIT for 15% off your first order. And by Trunk Club. Get clothes that fit, look amazing, without ever stepping into a store again. Trunk Club will help you create the wardrobe you've always dreamed of with your own personal stylist. Go to TrunkClub.com/TWIT and join Trunk Club today. And by Braintree. Mobile app development can be complex, but integrating your payments no longer has to be. With Braintree, your business can accept nearly every type of payment from any device with just one integration. Learn more at BraintreePayments.com/TWIT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to Audible.com/TWIT2. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. And man, there's a lot of it. At least that's what Nate Olivares Giles says. He's from the Wall Street Journal joining us today. Giles, right?
Yeah, you got it.
I ask you this every time. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
Hard G, soft G. I'm confused by the whole GIF debate. I don't know.
I always say GIF.
But you say Giles?
Exactly. Yeah. I guess I'm a hypocrite. I don't really know how to slice that.
You're one of the few people in the world who can say you're a hypocrite when you say GIF.
Because of my name and GIF.
Because of your name, yeah.
Yeah, that's lame.
Great to have you. Also from Mark Million is here from Bloomberg Business Week. Bloomberg. Are you still doing global or you're now just tech in general?
We do plenty of global.
Yeah.
All sorts of tech.
Your boss is going to endorse Hillary Clinton.
My boss's 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 boss, Michael Bloomberg.
The big guy. Does he come around much anymore?
Yeah, he goes.
Former mayor of New York.
He's frequently he's head of the company. Shareholder.
When he was mayor, he probably had to kind of put the company into a whole receivership or something, right? Some sort of. Yeah.
He stepped aside. Hired Dan Doctoroff as CEO.
Came back.
And then once he was done with the mayorship, he came back. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Good to have you as always.
Likewise.
And joining us via Skype from New York City is Steve Kovac. He is with techinsider.io, and he's at Steve Kovac on the Twitter. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
Hot day today in the big city.
It's ridiculous. I barely left my apartment this weekend.
Yeah. I love the
album. I went to the beach.
I love the album covers. I've never noticed it.
Yeah. Those are my dad's old albums, a few of them, and he sent me a whole bunch of them, and I framed a few.
You know, it's funny. I recognize a lot of them. They're from my era, you know?
Yeah, he listened to those when he was in college and in the Army. And
your dad must be my age. That's so funny.
My dad's 61.
Yeah, I'm 59. So, yeah, those are the same albums.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's probably my roommate. Anyway, great to have you. I guess the big story, which just broke today, Verizon is confirming that indeed they are buying Yahoo, $4.8 billion. Steve Ballmer's going yes, yes. He bid $41 billion for Yahoo not so long ago when he was the CEO of Microsoft. That bid failed, and Steve dodged thereby a huge bullet. $4.8 billion doesn't seem like a lot. In fact, even when they first started putting Yahoo on the block, they were speculating $8 billion.
Yeah, it's like two Los Angeles Clippers, basically. Yeah.
Well, this deal, it's for the core company, which is search and media and all that stuff, but it doesn't include some of the intellectual property. They sold off the Alibaba stake in the spinoff.
Yeah, so. I mean, that was the most valuable part, wasn't it? It was
right.
Yahoo
and that
Japan
would have been included in the Microsoft deal, okay. You know, 7 years okay. ago, 8 years ago.
Yeah, in fact, it says the stake in Alibaba and Yahoo Japan are worth $40 billion. So, in fact, that might have been a good deal had they been able to get that. $4.8 billion, that's things like Flickr, right? It's things like Yahoo Mail. Is Yahoo Mail the most valuable thing, or is it the ad agents, ad business?
Definitely the ad business.
Still the ads, ad and search, and just like they're kind of a lot of users that have stuck with them and just kind of go to them by default for a lot of web services. You
know? Personally, the fantasy football, I think, is the most valuable part of Yahoo.
They have a pretty good fantasy football, right?
Yeah, it's very good.
They have properties that are very highly visited. OMG.com is a very high traffic site. TV.com. But it does feel
Yahoo
a little
News.
Yahoo News. It does feel a little bit like Verizon's collecting antique internet properties. They bought AOL. Now they have Yahoo. I'm sure they're looking at Alta Vista, thinking, can we add this to our collection?
Yeah, where's Ask Jeeves at?
You know? Yeah. I mean, they've mastered this sort of like rapid deterioration of internet businesses. Like they picked up Tumblr, and then it instantly became
Yahoo
uncool.
Yeah.
But, you know, what has Verizon done with AOL that's really made AOL more exciting, more modern, more innovative? And that just makes me think, what are they going to do with Yahoo? I understand that they're trying to build themselves into a media company, into a fully fledged tech company, and not just, you know, dumb pipes per se as a telecom provider. But I just, you know, I don't really know what Verizon's vision is with Yahoo based on what they've done or not done with AOL.
I guess AT&T is doing similar acquisitions. Is it that the business, being a cell company, is not a long-term good prospect, that you need to find some other things? You don't want to be pipes. You want to be content.
I think it comes down to that, like showing growth. You're always going to have growth as far as people, you know, wanting to get web access in new places, whether that's cellular or that's, you know, delivering internet to the home or to a business. But this then gives them something to do with those pipes and to kind of, you know, leverage that ability to reach people. It gives them something to offer. And, you know, you're already seeing that. I think Verizon has an app. What's it called? Like Go90 or something like that?
Go90.
Yeah. And they're already delivering, you know, video content. And, you know, I guess if you're controlling the pipes, you know, Comcast, NBC's trying to do the same thing. I don't know.
Bloomberg Technology quotes Craig Moffett, who's an analyst, well-known analyst at Moffett Nathanson. This deal speaks to a clear strategy shift at Verizon. They're trying to monetize wireless in an entirely new way. Instead of charging customers for traffic, they're turning to charging advertisers for eyeballs. They're seeing, and it, I mean, that's certainly what publishers in other sectors are doing. They're saying, well, our business is, I mean, it always has been for newspapers delivering ads.
You got it.
Yeah. But
see, that is a business model that's existed for more than 100 years. And okay, maybe it's new for Verizon per se, but it's not new for the world. And I just don't know. I'm just not sure if I really see something very new there.
I agree. I think you nailed it when you said, what have they done with AOL that makes it more interesting property?
Yeah.
I mean, they've kept Engadget going. It hasn't changed. They've kept TechCrunch going. HuffPo.
Huffing. Yeah.
But there's been no changes there. Those properties are exactly as they were before AOL was sold.
And that's the thing I'm the most interested in is the new media play that they're making. I mean, Yahoo News is massive. Oh my God, it's huge. And it's like, I think Nate was just saying, it's like the homepage for so many people. If I just know anecdotally, if Business Insider or Tech Insider gets a link out from Yahoo News, it's like a fire hose.
Interesting.
I think Yahoo News is still the most visited news property on the web.
Wow. That surprises me. Is that a default? Is that why? Is it a homepage kind of thing? Or
I think it's old
and
habits.
And they've taken content from... They don't just write their own content. They have AP partners like BI and CNET and, I mean, just gobs of other syndication partners. So, I mean, they get all this free content coming in. I mean, it's just a massive, massive news site for a lot of people.
I use my Yahoo for years as my homepage. I see it's still around. I thought they killed it. But this has to drive some traffic, right? I mean, it's got that's the news in the middle here.
You got it.
And, of course, the big story today – Kourtney Kardashian shows off her chiseled bod in a white-hot bikini.
And then number two, Selena Gomez bikini grams prove she's definitely a 10. And then, careful, these 10 cars look nice, but they're made cheap. It
you
is,
know these news results are personalized based on your activity. It's my Yahoo.
It's my Yahoo. I don't know where they got the idea. I'll never forget it. I was at a podcast expo some years ago. A guy came up to me. He said, three words, the next big thing in podcasting, bikini rich content.
He seriously
said that to me.
That's basically what Instagram is. I mean, I would not.
Well, that depends. You know. Again, that's what you put in your feed. So I'm looking at news.yahoo.com, which is the kind of uncustomized normal. And it's politics. It's like a news page.
Yeah, and Yahoo Finance is great.
I used Yahoo Finance for years. But Google has competitors in all these categories, don't they?
Yeah, so they're smaller. Google Finance is smaller. Google News is smaller. Yahoo still leads them in a number of places.
You nailed it. Old habits die hard.
You got it. I mean, AOL still has a substantial amount of people who are like paying for dial up and all that kind of crazy stuff. So
yeah, it's true.
You know, there are a lot of folks who like what they have and are used to things being delivered a certain way.
Maybe Verizon's to be praised for not going for the sexy new thing, but instead focusing on solid.
They're going where the people are.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if you have the largest collection of readers on the internet, that's worth something, especially when you combine that with another giant property, which is AOL. You start to, like, put this massive buying power in front of advertisers. They really have a lot of leverage in selling ads. I mean, you can sell ads for higher prices when you have a large collection of people that can't be reached elsewhere.
But what is Verizon going to do that Marissa Mayer couldn't do, that she didn't do? I mean, she was, you know, one of the sharpest minds in Silicon Valley, supposedly, you know, and has been running it for, what, like the last 4 years. And, you know, it's one thing to just sell ads against these sorts of things, but I just don't feel like I'm seeing any genuinely new ideas.
Maybe it's more valuable to Verizon because of the business that they're in than it would be as a standalone property, you know? I mean,
yeah, and you combine it with AOL, which is another huge online media company. You put those two together, you can conceivably sell ads for higher prices.
Marissa, by the way, will probably not go along with the deal. She's
out.
And gets a $55 million golden parachute.
That has to... I mean, I know, like... There might be some bruised egos here. She wasn't able to pull off the turnaround that she wanted, but
that takes some of the sting out of it.
That's got to feel good.
Well, she probably negotiated that when they tried to get her from when they got her from Google. I would guess.
Right.
3 million severance, 26.
3 million cash, 26,000
for health benefits, 15,000 for outplacement, and then $52 million worth of accelerated. And restricted
stock.
Wait,
she needs outplacement?
That's probably just the standard thing, right? We're going to help you get a job there, Marissa. We got a little questionnaire for you. Just fill this out here, your skills and your interests, because it may be that
like
you got to...
don't know who she is.
Who are you, exactly? Wow. She got $36 million last year as pay, so she's not hurting. What will happen to Marissa Mayer?
I feel she could sit back for a little bit, maybe advise some startups that she really believes in, kind of have some sort of like quiet influential role, let things blow over, and then maybe come out with like a really great idea of her own in a few years, or join as like a second tier executive at some big company.
The least interesting thing for her to do would be what most people in her position do, which is become a VC.
Yep.
That was my gut reaction to what she'd do.
That's kind of the fallback, you know, all right, well, I'll be a VC. And I think, you know, if you're looking for investment, normally, when you become a partnership at a venture capital fund, you take some of your money, you put it in, and then they use you as a way to attract startups because Marissa Mayer will be your advisor. She'll help you make connections. I think that a lot of VC firms are probably already knocking at her door if they haven't been before.
Yeah, who wouldn't want her on their team?
But again, one of the least interesting things she could do. I like the idea of her saying, I have an idea. Let me start a company.
Yeah, she's not done that before. So
she's young.
Be an interesting new experience.
She's smart. She's got. I think she was put in a position of really something that was impossible to succeed at.
Yeah, but you know, I think you gotta almost give her some props just for taking a company that was in such a terrible, really kind of spot and just owning it and trying to turn it around. You know, it clearly didn't work out. But,
a terrible quarter,
but
by
it's,
the way.
You know, if you're one of the top folks at Google, you know, a growing, innovative, you know, cutting edge company, and you leave for Yahoo,
right?
You know, that says a lot about how much you believe in yourself.
Yeah, it's, yeah, confidence.
Yeah,
yeah. Some would say hubris, but we'll say confidence. We'll say confidence. And she did everything she could. You know, and it's impossible. I don't think we can do a postmortem on how well she did. It's very hard to understand what her options were, what she might have done, what she might have done differently. Unless you guys feel confident that you could have saved Yahoo.
Nah, I could have saved Yahoo.
So. Yeah, could you? You could have turned around. What would you have done? You're a confident guy.
Paid Mark. Katie Couric less, maybe.
Oh. Oh, hey, what happens to Katie now?
Does anyone? I mean, you know, they have this massive audience for their homepage. But do we know what their audience looks like for their actual shows, which seem to be inconsistent at best?
Well, one of the things they did some months ago is they killed many of the verticals.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
They had verticals, and they just kind of merged them in. There was Yahoo Car and Yahoo Tech. And they kept David Pogue, but I think they kind of took tech and merged it into the mainstream. They certainly did with many of the other verticals.
Yep.
Katie Couric is still there. She's got a Yahoo News exclusive. Trump lawyer Michael
DNC.
Cohen. She's their global anchor, and there you go. She's in a studio. Looks just like a traditional studio, but it's Yahoo News studio. I wonder if this will continue. Would you? If there's a Verizon News studio, is that the same? Verizon didn't rebrand the stuff they got from AOL though.
No. Yeah, they kept the brands. I think they will keep the brand separate from Verizon.
Yeah.
Yeah, if the point is to retain that audience, which is maybe sticking around based on familiarity and comfort, you know, changing the brand seems like it would be a good way to ruin that, right?
They're probably looking at Comcast, similar situation. They don't want to be a dumb pipe. They went out, they buy NBC Universal. Now they're making movies. Now they've got a television network. It does say Comcast. When you go to Universal Pictures, it says Universal, a Comcast company.
Yeah.
And they say NBC Universal, and then Comcast kind of gets mixed in there. When you go to 30 Rock, right, Steve? When you go to the Rockefeller Center, there's Comcast branding.
Oh, yeah. It's everywhere.
Yeah. So they're not hiding the fact that they own it, but they have left those properties to be NBC. It's not called Comcast. It's probably a very similar idea.
Yep.
All right. There we go. Yahoo. That's the breaking story for the day. Yahoo. This week is going to be a busy week. We're going to get Apple quarterly results on Tuesday. Any predictions there? You think?
I think it's going to be expected. Just slow iPhone growth again.
Continue a decline of the big fruit company. Sales of iPhone continue to decline. iPad continue to decline. But they're waiting for next quarter. They're waiting for the new iPhone in September, right?
Yeah, they are kind of waiting for the new hotness for the iPhone 7 and all of those things. But, you know, I think a little bit of context, like they are declining, but they are still selling more phones than any other single company in the world and still making a ton of profit.
You can't keep that torrid growth up.
It's just the pace of growth is slowing, right?
But you watch because the stock market's going to say, oh, it's all over for it. I mean, the headlines will come out on Tuesday. You know, it's the end of Apple's. It's all over for Apple. What's next? It's a different company. I have to say, I don't feel like used to be you could say, oh, they'll innovate their way out of this. I don't know if you could say that this time.
Well, I think what we're seeing is something a lot of us have written about is a bit of a commoditization of smartphones, right? So
can you tell the difference between these and then Apple? They're all slabs of glass, right?
Exactly. But you know, Apple was the one to define that. And they're still selling more of their iPhones than
we should play a new game.
Anything else?
Which one is the iPhone? Right? They're all kind of this. In fact, the iPhone's starting to look a little bit behind as Android manufacturers continue to innovate. You look at what the Moto X is kind of an interesting, Z, I should say, the interesting device. It's super thin, but you add capabilities by snapping on magnetic backs. I mean, and the LG's doing the same kind of idea with the modules and. Mm-hmm.
And Samsung's really gotten it together. I've reviewed Android phones for years, and I really hated a lot of the early Galaxy phones.
They're
and
much
Notes.
Better now.
They're fantastic.
The S7
now. The cameras
fantastic.
Are great. The operating system
and we're gonna
the way
see,
they cover Android is starting to not suck. Finally,
a Note. We're gonna see good. A Note 7 August 2nd. They're gonna announce
pretty soon.
Yeah, will it be waterproof?
Yeah,
it should be.
Why not?
Now, is the 7 actually waterproof, or is it
the
like,
7 is supposed to be,
it,
yeah.
It, I mean, you can put it under, in our testing, we put it
didn't
in,
didn't you
under
see Lil Wayne and... pouring champagne on it? Dude.
Oh, I missed that.
Where have you been?
It was a Super Bowl commercial.
Yeah. He's, yeah. And then his buddy pours champagne on his iPhone, and they go, oh, dude, you can't do that. It's actually a pretty funny ad. But I did talk to somebody who was very disappointed that his S6 was not waterproof. Lost it.
Yeah, they had it with the 5. They took it away with the 6. They brought it back with the 7.
And was it Consumer Reports? I think it was Consumer Reports that dunked the S7 and said, well, it's not that waterproof.
That was the Active, which is the other variation version of it. And then they, apparently they fixed some kind of process that in the manufacturing process, and now that's okay. But no one should buy the Active anyway. It's ugly. So the...
Get the Edge.
Get the regular S7.
You
want the Edge, which is the most beautiful phone you can buy right now.
Totally impractical, but boy, it sure looks nice. It's the infinity pool of smartphones.
I honestly, I'm not into the Edge. Like the screen curves
really?
On the end. Yeah, I mean.
I love it.
The screen curves, and I guess it feels nice in your hand or whatever, but
the problem is,
it doesn't make anything look better.
I touch it by accident all the time. It's a perfect Pokemon Go phone.
Yeah.
Apps are built for flat screens, and then you have like that slight taper. I guess
it's a little weird.
It just kind of bothers me on you know.
Yeah. Apple, there's no doubt at this point, and I've been playing with iOS 10, that Apple is playing catch up in almost every respect, and in some cases is way behind.
But I think what it's going to come down to for a lot of these companies, and this is where it's really going to be about Apple, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, and maybe Facebook, maybe, is how they tie all of these things together, right? So, you know, if you know, smartphones are growing to a point where it's something that everyone wants to have, and for a lot of people out there, it is maybe their first computer or their only computer, then it's going to be about leveraging that and tying those things together. So the voice control is going to be important. The search sort of prediction that you're seeing with Siri and Google Now and Amazon Alexa is going to be important. And I think that's that next layer where things are going to go. Now, if you
it's look, all about software going
exactly,
forward.
And Samsung isn't even at play in that regard.
Because they're Android. Even, what are they going to do?
Exactly. They're just making the device.
Right.
They have some software, but
that's a good point. Apple could have its edge is making better software.
That's where it's going. Yeah. You know,
they've done that with the camera. I mean, the camera is all about the software, not about the lens.
You got it. So Google is in that position where they can tie all those services together on other people's hardware and maybe some of their own a little bit here and there, tying it in with the home and all of these things. Maybe, Apple can do that. Microsoft with Cortana.
Maybe that's why Google, it's rumored, will do new Nexus phones where they're going to take control of it. They're going to make themselves more like an Apple, where they make the phone beginning to end, control it totally.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's going on with Google, is they say, well.
That's definitely what's going on.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. That's the only way they see they can really push Android forward is to make their own hardware in a very Apple. I mean, they hired Rick Ostrello to run this new hardware division.
He was at Motorola.
He was at Motorola before.
Yeah.
And this is a major part of that is his team. It starts with the phone and branches out to things like home, maybe some tablets and Chromebooks and VR headsets if you want to get wacky. But, I mean, it starts with the phone. And, I mean, as we know, they have this major update problem, and Samsung and HTC and the carrier partners can't get it together. So they're going to take matters in their own hands now. And it's going to be really interesting next year to see what kind of phone they build first and then build out from there.
Pause for a second. Is that rumbling coming from Steve, Karsten? Yes, it is. Yeah.
Rumbling?
Yeah. It sounds like maybe – is it? Are you breathing? Maybe move the mic up a little higher. Maybe you're breathing into it. I don't know.
How's that?
No.
Oh, you know what it is? It's my AC.
Oh, it's blowing on you. That's what it is.
That's New York.
You want to flip – maybe on. If you flip the headphone around and put the mic on the other side? I don't know if it'd be better. Where is it blowing from?
My window.
No, I mean, which point to the direction?
Oh, on my mic side.
Oh, yeah.
Can I do that? I don't know.
Yeah, flip the mic around to the. Usually, you can flip it to. Oh, you can on that one. It has to be on the left.
Really,
no, you cannot on that one.
How's that? Can you hear me now?
That's a lot better.
Okay.
Can you wear it like that?
Yeah.
You look like you're about to record a hip hop video.
Yeah, that's right.
DJ Steve Kovac is here.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was blowing on.
Oh, it's still doing it.
It's still doing a little bit, yeah.
Here, let me turn the fan down a little bit. There we go.
Sorry about
that. Did that help?
Yeah, you know, You can wear it on the other side. Let's see what it... Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, much better.
All right. I think we're good now.
So it was the wind hitting it.
Yeah. Yeah. The AC is a few feet away from me, so the air is coming in.
Yeah.
That's why you need those luxury seats with the fan underneath.
Blows up, not down. No one knows.
As long as you're staying cool.
You're getting your tuchus AC. what were we talking about? I have no idea. Oh, Apple. Yes. And Android and the new phones from Google. Actually, in one respect, Apple is achieving parity with Android. Android has its stage fright exploit, an exploit that would allow you to send a malformed MMS message to an Android device, and the media player would give you full access, and you could pwn the machine. Looks like OS X, iOS, even Watch OS and TV OS had the same vulnerability. Cisco discovered it, did the right thing. They told Apple before they told the world, and Apple has pushed fixes for OS X El Capitan, iOS, Watch OS, and TV OS. So update, folks, because what would happen is somebody sends you an iMessage, malformed iMessage, and he or she could actually take over your phone, remote code execution, get everything. There is no update yet for Yosemite or Mavericks. So if you're on a Macintosh with Yosemite or Mavericks, maybe don't use iMessage. I don't know.
Or get to El Capitan since it's free.
Yeah, do it now.
For computers going back as far as about 2007.
It's funny. I don't know if it's a coincidence that it's in the media player. It's in very much the same place as it happened in Android. Or just that these are kind of vulnerable parts and pieces. Windows has had problems in the past with the WMF player, DLL, because you could send it an image and it would allow buffer overflow, and then you could use it to execute code remotely.
Well, both Android and iOS are Linux-based, and this exploit for iOS...
Well, iOS isn't Linux-based. It's BSD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what this was doing is it was using the API that iOS uses to render images.
Right.
And taking advantage of that.
Very similar to that.
Yeah. So you get something in, you think it's a TIFF, you render it as a TIFF, and then it changes into malware. So, you know, all the software updates went out on Monday. So if you have any kind of Apple device, like, it's not advice, it is instruction, update it to the latest operating system you have. It's free. Just take the time to do it. You know, the fix is already there. But this was a serious enough thing that it pushed Android to issue monthly OS updates, you know, Google to push monthly OS updates to Android last year. So it's not a joke. It's definitely something people could take advantage of. And especially with Cisco, the way they explained it, they kind of detailed how the exploit works. And really, you know, now that it's publicly known, it seems like folks would actually take advantage of it.
So it's really important that you update it now.
Yeah, just do it. It's free. Yeah. It's easy.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Windows. We're only a few days away now from the end of the Windows 10 free upgrade. And Microsoft's, in one last annoying push, getting even a little bit more, a little bit more aggressive, getting you to Windows 10. Lots to talk about. Got a great panel for you. Mark Millian from Bloomberg Business Week, Bloomberg.com/tech. From the Wall Street Journal, Nathan Olivares-Giles. And from Tech Insider at techinsider.io, Steve Kovac. We got a new sponsor to tell you about. You know, actually, I want to show you framing. Have you ever done framing?
Like framing a picture?
Yeah, or? Like you got a poster.
No.
No, you don't, because you just put it on the wall with thumbtacks, because you're a young guy.
Well, frames are expensive.
Oh, you're right. They're horribly expensive.
Yeah.
Unless I got a new sponsor for
my
you.
Walls are just empty. It's
no,
sad.
But because you should, you know, you should put some stuff up. Right. I'll tell you about FrameBridge. This was actually founded by somebody who did a frame. Oh, I think, what did she have? She had a drawing. What was it? We heard the story. She had a poster, and the frame cost more than the poster. She said, well, this is kooky. So she started FrameBridge, which is the easy way to do custom framing online. And, you know, I've been doing framing of crazy things. Like, this is, look at this. This is a 2FX motherboard framed.
Oh, that's
right?
Cool. That is cool.
You don't, it's not just pictures you can frame. This one I got to get reframed. I'm going to send this to FrameBridge. Look at this. This is core memory. Remember the old, you don't remember it, but wow. The old days, memory was wires around magnetic cores. So motherboards make a great thing. You got pictures. You can get your Instagram pictures. They have mini frames for Instagram pictures. We have, I thought, since they're a new sponsor, I'm going to show you what it looks like. Pricing starts at $39 for an Instagram. If you've got a giant movie poster, $139. Now, if you check the frame store, two or three times more. So this is very affordable. They have a happiness guarantee. They guarantee that they will give each piece personal care and attention. And if you're not happy, full refund. So you're never at risk. So what? I forgot what we framed now. I sent this away, and I forgot what we framed. Let's see here.
A Pokemon screenshot.
By the way, they package it because it's your precious thing, right? Very well. So you'll have to forgive me here as I tear into this packaging. You know, bubble wrap and everything. Oh, look at this. This is nice. This is a family photo that we got. I think Lisa took this picture. And how much did this cost, Lisa? It was under $100, I think, right?
It was the small frame.
So it's a small frame. Instead of spending hundreds of dollars at a framing store, let FrameBridge take care of you. You can call them. You can walk through it, or you can do it fully online for diplomas. I have now, I'm going to send this off next, a map, I love it, of all the undersea cables. It's huge. And we looked at getting it framed at our frame store. It was so expensive, I said, I'm not doing that. So we got FrameBridge now. Whether you're looking for eclectic frames for the photos on your phone, you need help planning a gallery wall, FrameBridge has you covered. And we've got a deal for you. Let me just get this out here. Look at that. Isn't that beautiful? Look at that.
It's a nice shot.
Beautifully framed. I think Lisa took that of Michael, our son, and his friend Tanner, right? It's beautiful. That was in Newport Beach. And it's all framed. They send you with the kit everything you need to hang it on the wall. Look, they even put little felt stops. So this is a quality framing job. This is not a budget framing job, but it is a budget price. They use premium real wood moldings, acid-free mat. That's important so that it won't decay the thing you're framing as the mat decays. Foam board, shatterproof acrylic glazing. So it's as good as glass, but less glare, and it protects you from UV. So it really protects your artwork. Their delivery timeline is incredible. They get it to you fast, and you're going to get 15% off when you go to framebridge.com and use the promo code TWIT. 15% off your first order. This is something that people don't do because it is so expensive. I can tell you, having framed art, whether it's yours or framed photos, is awesome. And what a fun thing to do, to take your Instagram photo and get a frame instantly. Framebridge.com. And make sure you use that offer code TWIT so you get 15% off. You can safely ship your art to the studio in their prepaid packaging or upload a picture on the FrameBridge site or use the FrameBridge app. And you can even upload directly from Instagram. FrameBridge.com. We welcome them to This Week in Tech. Nice to have you. Moving along, talking about more tech news. Elon Musk's master plan. He shouldn't call it a master plan. I'm just saying,
why not? It sounds great.
It sounds diabolical.
It sounds like he's from like a comic book.
He's playing up the evil genius thing, right? He should be doing it and then the blog post is master plan part duh for unknown reasons.
Well, he did the first one.
It was part
Well,
no, it was part one. It wasn't part one. It was just master plan.
Master plan. Yeah.
So he did this 10 years ago, and actually I give him a lot of credit because he's always been very upfront about what are we trying to do here. And it's not I want to build a rocket company with SpaceX, or I want to build a car company with Tesla, or I want to build a solar panel company. It's all about kind of looking at the future. I really admire this guy. Looking at a sustainable future for our planet, getting us off fossil fuels, getting us on renewable. And in order to do that, he says we got to own all the pieces of the puzzle. We need to move to electric vehicles. We need to make solar panels everywhere. Mm-hmm. The Powerwall is interesting. Tesla makes a giant home battery that allows you to completely get off the grid. You charge the battery during the day with your solar panels. It keeps your house running at night. I think it's pretty impressive. Now, the plan also includes, and this is the most interesting thing, now we're starting to look forward with part duh, making semi-tractor trailer trucks, electric trucks, buses, people movers. He also has in the plan the idea that you might not use your car all the time, that you might let others use it, kind of rent it out.
Even for a mobile app to control
like
that.
Like an Uber competitor some point down the line.
What do you think of all of this? I like it that he dreams big.
I think it. He did actually fulfill quite a bit from the original master plan.
The original plan was we'll build a very expensive, small-volume car, sell that to bootstrap a medium expensive
luxury sedan.
That's the Model S. I don't know about the crossover, the Model X SUV.
I think that was in there.
Was that in there too?
That's the expensive,
And then the idea being to use all of that to bootstrap an affordable Model 3.
Model 3. Although he's in the second master plan, he did sort of acknowledge that he's abandoned it because the original goal was build a Model 3 and then keep pouring all of the inflows of cash into creating cheaper and cheaper vehicles, which he's now in the new plan, he said, I think the 3 is cheap enough. We're going to do some
But he's also talking about doing like a pickup truck, so he's definitely looking at broadening the range, making it like a real car company. Yeah,
and everything has to be electric or it doesn't. And ultimately, everything has to be autonomous. He also, 10 years ago, said solar power. I mean, that was not... Now, Solar City is not his, although he's trying to now buy it. It was started by his cousins, and he's on the
board.
He's
chairman,
He's a big shareholder anyways, right?
So it kind of is his, right? So, yeah, I would say success in part one. It's time to start thinking about part two.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of trying to sell the Solar City deal that he proposed that the shareholders hate.
Why do the shareholders hate it? Because they feel like it's risky.
And that it's largely disconnected from building a car company.
Well, I think that's part of why he released part two of his master plan now. Is to show like, hey, I have a vision. This is how these things tie together. This is where it's all going. And you know, I think he's making his public argument, and especially with him coming out recently saying he thinks this is going to pass by a 2/3 vote to approve this.
So he believes that the stockholders will go for this.
Well, he believes that. Yes, it seems.
But he also believes we're in a simulation and it's not real.
That's right. Yeah. But he's trying to sell people on that. Like, this is his pitch. And he's saying it's going to be 2/3. And even if he doesn't believe it, he's trying to make it a reality. He's trying to swing people around.
God bless him. And I should disclose, I bought into this because I put a deposit down in October for a Model X and picked it up Friday. Took the factory tour. They're already remodeling the factory. They're already making – it's a big factory. They bought the old General Motors NUMMI plant, which has 10 times the capacity that it's using right now. And so a lot of it's just storage, warehouse. It's empty.
Yeah.
But they were starting construction for the Model 3 part of it. It's kind of a cool plant. It's all – a lot of robots, a lot of big, giant German and Japanese robot arms doing arc welding. Moving the car on and off conveyor belts. It's pretty amazing. So I may be a little bit of a Kool-Aid drinker. Or what is it? Ipanema pomegranate drinker when it comes to a Tesla. But I love the idea. And I have to say, you know, we have Solar City panels. I've ordered a Powerwall. The idea of when I drive down the street, it's being not just zero emissions from the car, but zero footprint because I made the energy... With the help of the sun, I made the energy myself. It's kind of a nice feeling. And I think that this is a reasonable place to push the world, right, if we're going to save it.
It makes a lot of sense. I'd like to see a little bit more accessibility. I'd like to see them not necessarily abandon
expensive.
But, I mean, you know, that's where things start. And even though he did, like Mark said, pull back a little bit on that plan for cheaper electric vehicles, it still seems to be part of what the overall vision is. But, I mean, I think – That's super important. If it's going to catch on, there needs to be no barriers based on your income level to take part in this sort of thing, which those are real and those exist today. But I think the semi-trucks running on electric power is actually pretty huge because that's kind of an economic, you know, backbone. It's something that's not going to get replaced anytime soon as far as like shuffling things around the country and internationally. And if you can sell an entire industry on that to support electric vehicles, you know, maybe that can help subsidize some of the consumer-facing business.
He's also really still all in on autonomy, even though there have been some negative headlines. He points out we're terrible drivers. The automotive fatalities are up 8% in 2015 to one death in every 89 million miles. He pointed out very quickly that Tesla's autopilot has been death-free for 110 million miles. So even by that measure, it's safer. He says autopilot miles will soon exceed twice that number, and the system gets better every day. He says, Consumer Reports said you should disable it or at least relabel it. Autopilot is giving people confidence in something they shouldn't have confidence in. He says it would make no more sense to disable autopilot, as some have called for, than it would to disable autopilot in aircraft, after which our system is named. And he points out it's beta. And he said, we're going to keep it beta till autopilot is 10 times safer than the U.S. vehicle average. At that point, we'll remove the beta label. And when self-driving is approved, true self-driving is approved by regulators, it will mean you'll be able to summon your Tesla from anywhere. Once it picks you up, you'll be able to sleep, read, or do anything else en route to your destination. This is, by the way, people read this and they think they can do it now. And that's why...
That's the tricky part, yeah.
You really maybe shouldn't be pushing this so hard. Because there are people doing that. Don't do that, you nut! You'll also be able to add your car to the Tesla shared fleet by tapping a button on the phone app and have it generate income for you while you're at work or on vacation, significantly offsetting, at times potentially exceeding, the monthly loan or lease cost. There's a real problem right now. We're building a lot of cars, and most cars are not utilized more than 10%. So that's a huge waste of natural resources. The idea of sharing can make a massive difference as well. You know what? Isn't it great that you have people who dream big?
To put a little reality check, it's not just Elon Musk who's thinking about this. Like, I mean, he put out this cool master plan. He's Elon Musk, so we kind of glorify it a little bit. But Ford and GM and all the traditional car companies are thinking exactly the same way, especially when it comes to those services and car sharing and leasing out your own car. So it's not just an Elon Musk thing. I think we're a little just because it's him.
I give him a little credit for stimulating this, though. I think... Ford
has been talking about it for a year now.
A year. Yeah. Elon's been talking about it for 10 years.
GM bought Sidecar.
Once Uber took off, they realized, okay, car sharing is going to make
it. Elon Musk.
Right. But I think Elon, it makes sense what Elon's saying, which is Uber is just a first step. What you really need is autonomy.
Yep.
Then
Travis Kalanick has talked about this too.
Oh, I know. And I've talked to Brad. I can't remember his name. Templeton, who is an autonomous car expert. He was one of the creators of Usenet. He's been around a long time. And I talked to him 5 years ago. He said none of this really lives up to its potential until you can have a car come to you when you need it and then take off when you don't need it. That's the ultimate hope for autonomous vehicles. It's not about us not driving as much as it is about a much more even distribution of transportation.
Yeah, I think you have to give Musk a ton of credit for, like you said, stimulating, driving this conversation. It would probably be taking place whether he was there or not. But, I mean, a good example is that NUMMI plant that was a Nissan or Toyota plant.
Toyota,
right?
/ GM, right.
Yeah, that he bought. They were making some electric cars there,
right.
And they shut it down. They pulled
very
out on
famously,
them.
Right?
Very famously, General Motors has
You've
made
seen the
electric
movie
cars
Who
before.
Killed the Electric Car?
I mean, there are a lot of reasons why automotive companies don't want us to leave fossil fuels behind. There are a lot of reasons why energy companies, like the oil companies, don't want us to leave these things behind. They're dipping their toes in the water. They're saying this is the future of everything, and they're going that direction. But no one is doing just this the way that Elon Musk's companies are, which, whether or not that makes good business sense at this point remains to be seen, right? But it's something you have to acknowledge.
This is clearly an idea whose time has come. And, of course, many people have been talking about this. I don't think he's, sole-handedly created this.
Certainly
but
not.
He's one of the people who's really pushing it forward faster than anybody. You can't say that he's not well ahead of all the other automakers.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
The master plan is, in short, he says, create stunning solar roofs with seamlessly integrated battery storage. That's SolarCity plus Powerwall. Expand the electric vehicle product line to address all major segments, trucks, people movers. Develop a self-driving capability that's 10 times safer than manual via massive fleet learning. All of this, by the way, has to be bootstrapped. Somebody has to say, we're going to take the first steps.
Yep.
You don't get the massive fleet learning until you have a massive fleet. You don't get a massive fleet until you get a few early adopters to buy this stuff. It all takes somebody to bootstrap and finally enable your car to make money for you when you aren't using it.
The only thing that kind of scares me about all this is if we have cars that are driving themselves and we can sleep and all those things, like no one's actually going to sleep. Our bosses are just going to be bothering us on our phones
just more
and making us work. And that's the thing that scares me the most is right now when you're driving, you can say, I'm driving.
Yeah.
Don't mess with me. Leave me alone. And when this happens, it's just one more area of where we're just going to like it's less time to not have to work. So that kind of scares me.
That's true. That's like when Wi-Fi became ubiquitous on airplanes.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no.
It's hell. And to be clear, Microsoft has come out and said that they are working on some of these things, I think
good.
With Ford and others, to make you be really productive in the car and to make your car more like an office. And this is like real stuff. I'm
other
not just
people
being
are talking
right here.
Make your car more like a living room.
Yeah. And Microsoft is talking about making
office.
It more like
of course they
just
are.
I mean, but thank you know, you. They're the office company.
They're
so
the
I
workaholics
guess
in the
I hate that future. I hate that version of the future.
Yeah. But you know that's to some degree that's exactly what's gonna happen.
Exactly.
I think if we are safer, I think that's good. You know, I used to commute. I used to have a very long commute. I'd come home from Tech TV, be exhausted after the screensavers, have to drive an hour or two back to Petaluma from San Francisco. And I was getting scared towards the end. I was getting very sleepy. And I knew I was going to nod off someday and just plow into something.
Yeah, it's not a good way to feel.
It's scary. And I had to get home. I had kids and I had to get there. But I didn't feel good about it. In fact, I was very relieved when I got fired because I thought that might have just saved my life there because I'm not going to be making that commute anymore. If I were driving at that time, if I were driving my Model X, that thing, you don't want to let it drive, but it seems like it would help you an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, in stop-and-go traffic, particularly on the highway, I let it drive for almost 80 miles. And it really did it performed very well. But there were a few incidents where I was glad I was paying attention. A bag of cement had fallen into the highway. That happens a lot here in the Bay Area. I don't know about where you live. There's always crap.
Mm-hmm.
Gardeners, I've run into rakes, lawnmowers, bags of cement, sofas. There's always, for some reason, on the Bay Area highways. So I saw the cement. The car was driving. And maybe it would have gone around it, but I wasn't going to take the chance. But it's easy enough. You have your hands on the wheel. You steered around it. Then I tapped the stem twice and put it back into auto mode. A couple of times I did that where I didn't have the confidence it was going to do it. Mm-hmm. Probably doing the right thing. I don't think you should necessarily assume it's going
to
do
it. Well, that's where they say it's at right now is you're supposed to let the vehicle take over but be ready to jump in if you feel the need to, right?
Yeah.
But how do you maintain that level of engagement of being ready without getting complacent, maybe falling
asleep?
Well,
that's what Google says. It's a problem because if you aren't fully paying attention, it takes you a few seconds to say, okay, what's going on? Where am I?
Yeah.
So I don't know how I'll be. This is the first time I used it, you know, in the 100th time I used it.
On a long, long drive,
on a long
maybe,
drive. You know? But I kept my hand on the wheel, and it's kind of scary. You don't really want to let the car do it all. You kind of want to be there to supervise it. I was supervising.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that's what an airline pilot's doing.
Yeah.
When autopilot is landing the plane. Not when you're flying cross country.
Yeah.
But when it's landing, and sometimes they let autopilot land, you probably, I would hope, have your hand on the yoke and you're kind of paying attention, making sure.
But it's also probably scary to you because you're used to driving, right?
Right.
So for those behind us, those generations behind us who aren't used
they'll
to driving
get,
the
yeah.
way we are, they probably won't care, right?
Right. I mean, they'll get used to it. And then they'll plow into things. Unless, I think the key is if everybody's autonomous. But there's still going to be cement bags on the highway, at least here in the Bay Area. There's going to be lawnmowers. There is a lot to talk about with these autopilot crashes. There's, you know, I at this point, it's almost a PR war back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Vehicle logs confirm Tesla autopilot prevented possible pedestrian death. Their Montana accident, people are going back and forth. Was autopilot on? Was autopilot not on? We're in the early days of this. It's not perfect. Far from it. And I bought autopilot because I wanted to see what it was like, but I wouldn't trust my life or my family's life to it yet.
It's going to be the default legal defense in every auto collision.
The car didn't. I didn't do it.
Yeah.
I didn't do it.
Autopilot was on. It wasn't.
Autopilot. Didn't do it. I didn't do it.
Wrecked the car.
I didn't do it. I don't want to wreck my car. I just want to. That's why I'm not driving it anymore. I'm just going to leave it in the garage. It'd be safer there. I'm a terrible driver. Let's take a break. Talk about the blue screen of Windows 10. Ugh. Has anybody gotten that yet? I've upgraded all my machines, so I'm on Windows 10. Yeah. So I think most people have updated. But there is a new... This is the last few days of the free upgrade for Windows 10. And Microsoft wants to make sure you know. They don't want to be... They don't want to get any calls from people, and you know they will, saying, hey, where's my free upgrade? August 1, I still want my upgrade. Where's my free upgrade? Meanwhile, before we do that, let's talk about, well, you're pretty well-dressed. I like this shirt.
Thanks,
yeah. It's stylish.
It's not bad.
It's good. Do you like to shop?
Occasionally,
yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah, see, he looks like a guy who likes to shop. Mark Millian, on the other hand.
Not a guy who likes to shop.
Not a guy who likes to shop. I'm more like Mark than I am like Nate. I don't like to shop. But I have found a way to kind of up my style a little bit when Trunk Club does the shopping for me. Wouldn't you like to have a personal stylist who chooses like a shirt like that? In fact, I'm going to take a picture of that and send it to my stylist and say, I like this. Summer's here. Maybe spruce up your wardrobe. They got those fun parties, short sleeve button downs, lightweight blazers, swimwear. Whether you're looking for beach formal attire, grown-up graphic tees, yes, they have those too. Trunk Club is a shopping game changer, not just for men anymore. It's now for women too. It's from Nordstrom. So you know you're going to get great service, great quality clothing. And I love this. It's free. With Trunk Club, you'll never have to step foot inside a store. You get your very own personal stylist. You talk to her. You give her your measurements. You tell her what you like, what your preferences are. She will select items from over 80 top brands, put it up on a website. You can go, yes, no. Yeah, I like that. No, more of that. You really guide her. And I notice as I've gotten more trunks from her, she's really honed in. So now the trunks I get are everything in there is something I really like. This is the trunk. It comes with all this great stuff. Now, I still have paid nothing. I paid nothing for the shipping, nothing for the stylist. In this case, I like bow ties. She knows that. She sent me some great looking. Look at the bow tie with a mustache. I'm definitely keeping the mustache bow tie. That is
a different pattern on the other side.
That is awesome. Yeah, it does double duty. Yeah, that's it. And there's some shirts. There's some Nate Oliveras Giles type, you know, styling shirts in here. I bet you'd like these shoes. Look at these. They do shoes too. Look at these shoes, Nate. I think this is your style.
Actually, yeah,
those are cool.
These are pretty cool. I'm telling you, in all of this, I still have paid nothing. I have 10 days. Try it on. Do a fashion show for your honey or whatever. And then keep what you want. Send the box back. You pay only for what you keep, period. It's not a subscription. You're not going to get another box in a month. Only when you ask your stylist for it. It's no pain, no fuss, no muss. If you live in Dallas, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, or D.C., you can stop by their actual physical trunk clubs and meet your stylist and work with them. That's also free. The service, the shipping, always free both ways. So, to recap, premium clothes, expert advice, no shopping, no work, and no cost to you. I don't know why they're showing you. No shopping, Nate. No work, and you only pay for the clothes you keep. They're great clothes. Trunkclub.com/twit if you want to try it. Do go to that site. That way we'll get a little bit of credit. Trunkclub.com/twit. And we thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. We loved and for keeping me kind of snazzy. I'll be wearing that that mustache bow tie soon. Let me see if I can find the screen that the Windows is now sending out. I've actually seen it. All over. That's not it. Let's see. It says, sorry to interrupt you. Which is...
And they're so not sorry.
They're so not sorry. And it takes over the whole screen. So there's no menu anymore. Here it is. This is the screen. Sorry to interrupt, but this is important. Whatever you were doing, not important. This is important. The Windows 10 free upgrade offer ends July 29th. And there's two buttons, upgrade now or remind me later. A little bit over on the left, there's some text that says notify me three more times, which is the masochist button, right? No, do it again. I like that. Or the one you probably want, do not notify me again. Now, this is only going to last a few days because July 29th is the end of the line on this.
They have bumbled this like every step of the way.
Unbelievable.
I kind of feel bad for them because there's no way they can win because they're really just annoying people.
But
they had the little pop-up box in the right-hand corner where if you check the wrong button, it would just automatically do it. And people were like, why is my machine different? There's the other they made the change so that it would just like automatically reschedule itself. Now there's this. It's all so obnoxious.
People are still
going to be mad when they can't get their free update after the 29th.
Somebody sent me on Twitter. It's a kiosk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Running, obviously, Windows 7. And the whole kiosk is non-functional because it's got that big blue screen. It says, sorry to interrupt.
That sucks.
I mean...
but people are still... I mean, people are going to be mad at them for doing it this way.
Exactly. You're going to get calls on July 30th. What do you mean I don't get the upgrade anymore? What do you mean? Did you not see the 18 annoying notices? Did you not see it?
It's a mess. It's a real mess.
It's our long national nightmare is almost over. Thank God. They do say, by the way, that if you're using assistive technologies on Windows 7 or 8.1, the deadline is extended, which is a good thing.
Oh, okay.
So if you're using a screen reader or something like that, you have a little more time to go to Windows 10. I fully believe them when they say that they are going to start charging on July 30th. Do not, like, assume, no, they're just joking. No, I think they are going to start charging.
I think you're right. I think, you know, for shareholders and quarterly earnings reports and all that stuff, they have to start. They have to.
$119.
Yep.
From July 30th onward. And here's why you should do it. I fully respect anybody's decision to stay with Windows 7. Maybe not so much Windows 8, but I understand your decision to stay with Windows 7. And it's your right. Absolutely. It's your computer. Maybe you have software that doesn't work. Maybe you just like it better. Maybe hardware that doesn't work. But you are going to want to acquire the license, I think. So that in a year or two, you're not stuck forever, or you don't have to pay $119. You can, if you want, you could back up your machine because you don't want to take a chance. Make a good backup of everything. Accept the invitation. Do the upgrade. You, in theory, have 30 days to roll it back.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, well, that's why you made the backup. If as soon as you've activated Windows 10, as soon as you go to my computer and it says Windows 10 activated, you can now go back because you can go to Windows 10 anytime from then on. And I think the other reason you want to do this is I also believe, and I'm curious what you guys think, I also believe Microsoft when they say, this is the last version of Windows ever.
I don't.
You don't. You think there'll be a Windows 11?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for the simple fact that, like, you know, people are going to get tired of the brand, and someone in marketing is going to be like, we need to refresh things and make things exciting. And even if it's based on the same exact thing, they'll give it a new name. I mean,
well, that's kind of what they've been doing. I mean, to be honest, Windows 7 wasn't so different from XP,
yep,
or NT or even Vista. It just had a different UI, but it was the same under the hood pretty much.
Yeah, we've been on OS 10 forever on the Apple side. Yeah. Now it's going to be called Mac OS. It's the same operating system with iterative updates about every year or two. And it keeps things fresh and exciting. And, you know, they skipped Windows 9. They called it Windows 10. And they say it's the last version of Windows that's ever going to come out. But they're going to be updating it regularly. Well, there's going to be new features.
There's no guarantee. Here's why I believe them when they say this is the last version. Mm-hmm. What they say they're going to do is two or three times a year, they'll update it. So you're going to get a new version of Windows yearly or maybe even more often than that.
Yes.
Just as you're getting the anniversary update is coming out roughly the same time frame, August 2nd, they say. That's going to continue. I think they'll still be selling Windows licenses to business, which is the big part of the profit center.
You got it.
They'll still be selling it through OEMs.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you buy a new computer, it will have Windows 10 on it and they'll get whatever they get. We don't know, $15, $25. That's not going to change. How many people upgraded Windows? I mean, went and upgraded Windows. That's a small portion. That's the only money they're losing on this, if they don't make you pay.
Yeah, but there is an argument, and when you look at PC sales and analysts and stuff, they say that a new operating system is for some a reason to buy a new computer. And with the PC, you know, market sales kind of sagging for the last however many years, they're going to have to do something to give people a reason to buy a new computer. So it might not be the name of the operating system, but it might be like, okay, well, this laptop is going to be able to scan your eyeballs, and this one wasn't able to do so. So you got to get Windows 10, you know, Super Vista or whatever the hell it's going to be called. And you know,
Super Vista.
There are going to be reasons for you to upgrade, right? Or this one is the HoloLens compatible version of Windows 10, where Cortana will actually talk back to you instead of just listening or whatever, right? So...
Yeah, I mean, actually, you might be right. Here's the. This is from net market share. This is operating system market share.
So much Windows 7.
Look at it. It's 70, 40, almost half, 49% Windows 7.
Yeah, but a lot of 10.
19% 10, which finally has eclipsed 8 and XP.
XP's still hanging in there, though. Yeah. How old is XP? Like 16 years old?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of...
10. XP is like the Yahoo and AOL of Windows operating systems.
I think there are a lot of people with older computers that can't or won't upgrade. There's also a lot of unattended computers in closets and running servers and things that people aren't going to mess with. But, of course, there are huge security risks. They're not updating XP anymore. So, although... We haven't heard of a lot of XP exploits.
Not in a while.
So maybe it is safe to run XP. I don't know. I could see Microsoft just saying, this isn't our business anymore. Our business is not selling shrink-wrapped software of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
Not Windows, not Office. That used to be our business. Our business is software as a service. It's subscriptions to Office 365. It's cloud services. We want everybody on Windows 10 so that we can make money on all that stuff. And it's more in our interest to get everybody on Windows 10. And if it means giving away, I don't know what percentage it is of people who upgraded themselves, but it's got to be less than 10%.
Right? Yeah. They had that goal to get to 1 billion Windows 10 devices by 2018. Now they're saying they're not going to make it after all.
Yeah.
But I think that's what it is. It's rather than you spending money on Windows or Office once a year, once every couple of years, once every 3 years, give us a little bit of money every month. And it makes sense, you know. If you're trying to build a if you have a publicly traded company and you want to show some sort of a consistent user revenue coming in, having the same amount every month from a lot of people seems like a healthy business to build. So that
does that make sense? I think that we've always wanted to do that.
Well,
you raise the really, I think, the sole issue, which is PC manufacturers.
Yep.
But it's not Microsoft's job to get their OEMs businesses healthy.
It's not. But you know what I think is interesting, and this is just me, you know, wondering and thinking out loud, and I'd be curious to see what you guys think is, you know, when you buy a laptop, traditionally you hold on to it for 4 or 5 years, right? When you buy a PC, it's the same thing, whether it's a desktop, laptop, whatever. You buy a phone, you replace it about every 2 years, even if it doesn't have that many new features, in part because the thing slows down and it doesn't work as well, right? So if we're moving to kind of a mobile-centric world anyways, and if you're going to rob the PC manufacturers essentially of operating systems as an excuse to buy a new PC, I wonder if there's going to be some more engineered obsolescence happening on the PC side for those who still buy them. I wonder if PCs aren't going to last as long.
How do you just have them wear out?
Yeah, I think they're just going to make them lousier.
Then nobody will buy that company's computers. There was the same phenomenon in PCs like 15, 20 years ago. You would upgrade every 2 to 3 years because the new Pentium 3 was out.
Exactly. But now people are holding on to them longer.
Well,
so if
part of the problem is that hardware is caught up with software. You don't need a more powerful processor to run that big sluggish GUI. Our processors are so fast now. They do.
But that's not
what you need
phones.
You need a new category, is what you. Yeah, phones are catching up, right?
Well, mm-hmm.
But you need a new category. You need VR. You need speech recognition.
Yeah,
you need something that's going to drive that hardware harder.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we've. I don't know if that's on the horizon. Maybe augmented reality would be the one.
But
thing.
But look at the laptop. Like look at your MacBook, which has a mobile processor and no fan in it. That's kind of a step closer to this iPad Pro I have, which is a tablet. And I don't think there's any expectation that I have that this iPad Pro is going to last as long as my MacBook Pro,
right?
Which will last me maybe 6 or 7 years if I really push it. I mean, I think we're already kind of going in that direction. And
I just bought my last PC. It's going to run free BSD because I don't think you need a commercial operating system anymore, because most of what you do, unless you're doing, there's a few things, is Lightroom, Photoshop. And I think that there's good analogs in the free space for that. Music, maybe. But for what I do, I can do it all on a Chromebook, right?
Yeah.
All I need is a browser. Chromebook's
so interesting.
Right.
And so I want like $250
so
and die after.
I've got a beast of a computer with 32 gigs of RAM, with 4 terabytes of storage. I'm going to use ZFS, so it's going to be very reliable storage. It's a Xeon processor, not the latest and greatest, but it's 3.6 gigahertz with massive cache, 4 cores. I can't imagine. It's going to have to be a new platform. It's not going to be for a desktop computer. That's it. It's done. If for a visor that I walk around, a phone, you're still going to want something new. Yeah. But that's kind of the end of we have reached peak PC for sure, right?
Except for like animators and like those a very small community of creatives,
gamers.
Our editors are using Windows 8 because they don't need to upgrade. In fact, it would just destabilize this. Adobe Premiere and Windows 8. A lot of people who are doing animation, they're almost using dedicated machines.
And that's a very small slice of the PC buying population, right?
Apple has really pretty much, just abandoned that market, haven't they?
Well, yeah, the Mac Pro hasn't been updated in, 4 years?
No.
I mean, they made the garbage can.
That's the Mac Pro.
Right.
It screams, and it's still...
Oh, that was 4 years ago, the garbage can?
It screams in pain. It doesn't scream... You want my Mac Pro? You can have it.
I would love your Mac Pro.
Good.
I would love
your
Mac Pro.
I'm retiring it because it's a sealed box.
It's exactly what
you don't want in a desktop.
But see, I'm one of those few people who still occasionally will open up Final Cut and do some video editing.
It works very well for
works
that.
In like Photoshop and Lightroom. Yeah. And most people don't do that.
But I can't upgrade. The only thing I can upgrade on that is RAM.
Yep.
I can't even upgrade the video cards.
Yeah.
It's as sealed as an iPhone.
And the promise was that with Thunderbolt, you'd be able to daisy chain all of these accessories, but now everyone's moving to USB-C, so that's never going to come to fruition.
You know what I'm doing with my garbage can Mac? I have 3 Minecraft servers running on it.
You should totally give that to Nate.
I'm giving it to Nate.
You should not.
Because I'm replacing it with a small Linux NUC, one of those little small computers. It'll do a better job. It's more upgradable.
Yeah.
And it's more reliable than running. It's silly to run OS X as a server, although that's how I'm using it.
That is kind of silly.
Yeah. So it's yours.
Yes.
Yes.
You should get rid of that Model X, too, while you're Come on. Can we talk about how useless that thing is? Jeez.
Oh, man.
Actually, there
is one negative. And Elon, if you're listening, or anybody at Tesla, they block our website.
What do you mean Tesla does?
Yeah.
Oh, so you can't look at it in the car?
I can go to YouTube.com. I can go to Twitch.tv.
What?
So it's not that they think, there's video on there. They have podcasts anyway on it. You can't watch video on the screen, not for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Big 17 screen. But you go to twit.tv, it says the site does not exist.
Ouch.
And I know, Elon called downstairs to the factory floor. He said, well, you might be putting those to Model X's out there. Make sure nobody's going to twit.tv. That guy's a dick. Or something. I don't know what. It's blocking my website. Is that weird?
It's super weird. I don't know.
If anybody's listening to Tesla, can you please unblock Twitter?
Did you bring this up when you went on the factory tour?
No, or was it just nobody on? This is a bunch of robots. What are they? They go. That's all. They had no response whatsoever.
Time to get rid of that at Model X. Then.
I think I'm going to give it to Nate.
Thanks, Steve.
When does Nate get everything?
Because he's the best dressed.
Yeah,
no. If I could push a button and have it drive to New York, I would, but I can't.
There we go.
No.
10 years.
Yeah. Do you think, I wonder if the Model X will be upgraded to the point where it will have those capabilities, or if I've basically bought an obsolete car?
Well, like you can buy a car in an app, and then it drives itself from, North Carolina's manufacturing plant to your driveway?
Yeah.
That would be cool. Why not, right?
Why not? It still won't get Toots FTV, though. I said one thing it can't do. All right, moving right along. Do you want to talk about Milo?
Yes.
Yiannopoulos and Twitter?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Really an interesting story. So it goes back to Ghostbusters. Anybody see the new Ghostbusters yet?
Awesome.
It's good.
I loved it.
I was cracking up the entire time. I loved it.
So wait a minute.
Fantastic.
You mean women can be funny?
Believe it or not.
Okay.
Why anybody, by the way, in this day and age, thought women couldn't be funny is really beyond me, right?
There are a lot of jerks out there.
Melissa McCarthy is, she walks in the room and she's funny.
And you know what?
Kristen Wiig is funny. Just, you know, she looks funny. She's funny.
Yeah. But Kate McKinnon and Leslie Jones, I think, were funny.
I hear
than
Kate
those
McKinnon
two.
Is fabulous.
She might be my favorite character.
She's insanely hilarious. Oh, yeah. She stole the movie. Yeah. Like, hands down. Like, yeah. It's,
and Leslie Jones so is good?
Yeah.
She's good, yeah. Not so as good
here's,
as McKinnon.
Here's my theory. So Milo Yiannopoulos, who is or was at Nero on Twitter, decided, along with apparently some others, that first of all, they shouldn't remake Ghostbusters.
Yep.
Because the first three were such classics. Were there three? Two?
Two. There was two.
And such classics. Series. I don't think that. But anyway. And I think he didn't like that it was women, right? If you're going to remake it,
well,
at least have guys.
It's not really him. He was kind of stoking this subculture on Twitter that was saying all these things.
Right.
And that's why he got bumped off. It's not necessarily he.
You don't think it's him? Well, I think
it's definitely him. I mean, he knows who his followers are, and he's
exactly.
been like the hub of a lot of this.
And I also think he doesn't have any beliefs at all and loves just stirring stuff up. You've met people like that who just get off on... And they think it's all a great game. He's in it for the lulls, if anybody ever was, right? So he apparently doesn't like Jones' performance.
Yeah.
And starts, I don't know what he tweeted. Did he tweet racist stuff or he just incited his followers to tweet racist stuff?
He incited it. He kind of winked and nodded.
He was saying some stuff like she's ugly. And
yeah. He was kind of pointing that direction. And given that he knows who his followers are.
He knew that they would then post gorilla pictures.
Yes.
And really, exactly. I mean, terribly racist stuff.
Unquestionably racist, sexist, and just very hateful and kind of xenophobic in general.
She started retweeting, which I thought was an interesting response. It's very hard to know what to do with trolling. Do you ignore it? A lot of people say, just ignore it. Don't give them any energy at all.
Yep.
But it's hard when people are tweeting pictures comparing you to a chimpanzee, and you're an African-American. Do you want to ignore that? That is, I can't imagine anything. Hateful stuff, death threats, horrible stuff. So it takes an unusual tack
of essentially exposing them, making it public,
retweeting,
letting everybody see,
feeding the trolls.
Yeah,
and then says, and that's it. I'm out of here. I'm leaving Twitter.
But it was like, in her defense, like she had been getting this for days and weeks.
You don't have to defend
her.
You do not have to defend her.
And could you imagine the emotional toll it's going to take out of you after spending all day retweeting the BS, which just got more and more of those hateful.
Oh, believe me, I don't have to imagine.
Yeah, you know, it's just like.
I'm there, baby.
Yeah.
So Twitter's response to this is to ban Milo.
Permanently.
Permanently banned.
They banned him.
They had punished him before by taking away his blue check. Taking away your blue check. But now they banned him. Now, on the one hand, of course, because he is using his real name, I mean, at Nero's not, but everybody knows it's him.
Yeah.
He doesn't hide that it's him. It even says in his bio, they could ban him. The trolls, they can kill that account, but they just come back. They can't effectively stop.
And they're literally millions
the abuse.
Of them. Millions
you cannot of stop guys. The abuse.
Yeah.
So in some ways, I feel like he's being punished for doing the right thing, which is abusing her with his real name. It's never right to abuse,
well,
but at least
sure
he's using his real name, right?
He's using his real name, and yeah, he's not hiding behind anything. Sure, you can give him credit for that.
Well, I don't want to give him a lot of credit. But
the fact of the matter is if you're using, like Twitter's terms of service say very clearly, if you're using it to abuse other people, you might get kicked off the service.
Yeah.
His whole argument of free speech.
He says,
is just,
"I am the most fabulous supervillain on the internet." I mean, he
did he forget about Martin Shkreli or whatever that kid's name?
Martin Shkreli, yeah. There's another villain, but Milo loves this. He thinks it's fun. He enjoys it. And in fact, there's this is an article on Medium by Lori Penny called "I'm with the Band," She went to Milo's party at the Republican convention the night he was banned, and he was thrilled.
Yeah.
Best thing that could ever happen to him. He loved the publicity. So it's not a punishment, right? It just validates him, gives his brand mileage. We're talking about him. I wouldn't have talked about him otherwise.
Yep.
He's in all the media. He says, so let's see.
Well, he was claiming that's the end of Twitter as
she
a
says,
whole. Which
yeah, she says, like, how does he feel about his suspension? It's fantastic, he says. It's the end of the platform. The timing is perfect. I thought I had another 6 months, but this was always going to happen. And he thinks it's the end of Twitter.
Yeah, which just is not, shows obviously how overblown his own ego is in this regard.
Doesn't, you know, it doesn't.
I mean, you know, honestly, like, I think it's, in some sense, it's good for Twitter to do this, because if he is one of those kind of figureheads of, like, a really terrible community that exists on their platform, on their service, you know, take down those big folks, because those people who do use Twitter in that capacity to promote themselves and to build a business and to build a reputation as, in this case, if you want to call him a journalist or a blogger or whatever, he can't use that platform anymore. He can't reach right. millions of people that way anymore. The other trolls
so
that,
is that
were following him around.
Punishment, however,
yeah, because the other trolls that were following around, they don't have millions of followers.
There's no point. They're just having fun.
Exactly. They're just a bunch, you know, yeah. So if you're, you know, you can't get rid of trolling altogether, but you can get rid of the folks who are leading some of this really right. hateful BS. You can't let it go without any punishment, without any sort of recourse. So I think
nobody denies it's their right to do this. It's a private platform.
Oh, plenty of people deny it. Are you kidding me?
Really?
So oh my God, you should see I wrote a column about this, and you should see the hate mail I'm getting about this. People think it's a violation of free speech rights. These people have a fundamental misunderstanding of what free speech is,
yep.
especially on a private platform like this. Yeah. Oh my God, plenty of people think disagree with this decision for that.
Do you just send them the XKCD comic on free speech?
Yeah, I actually linked to that in my column too. Yeah. But I mean, it's still, these people are so whipped up, they don't pay attention to any of these facts.
Yeah.
But I mean, the real thing, I kind of disagree with Nate to a degree, and that's because we wouldn't even be talking about this had it not been a very famous movie star and SNL star retweeting all these images, and Jack Dorsey reaching out to her personally. This happens every day. I have so many friends who have gotten death threats. A really close friend of mine, she runs a feminist website. She's been death threatened, and yep. you name the worst possible things you can think of. She's had it tweeted at her, and she's reported these accounts for abuse and has gotten, oh, sorry, nothing can happen, back. And so, you know, it's nice that they can do this, and maybe this can be like this galvanizing point that Nate was talking about, and they can start doing something. But honestly, I'm not optimistic. They've been talking about their line for the last 2 years since Dick Costolo was CEO has been, oh, we're not doing enough to combat abuse. And then they just leave it at that and do absolutely nothing. But I think one move they did make this week that could be like a hint of laying the groundwork towards something is allowing anyone to apply for verification. And maybe you can see them getting to a point where everyone has their own real identity on Twitter. You can still be anonymous if you want to, but you're kind of like cornered off in this dark corner of Twitter where everyone else gets to see a verified identity and a filtered, you know, troll-free Twitter, which would be great. I think that's one of the answers to this problem. Not the answer, but, you know, approaching the answer.
It's an interesting response because, of course, Twitter is based – well, there's a couple of issues here. First of all, Twitter, to keep their stock price up, has to continue to grow. So it's
right.
not in their interest to ban users.
Yeah.
It's against their financial interest to ban users. On the other hand, if you're a celebrity, and this is where I think it is a double standard, if you're a celebrity and you get attacked, you can almost always get your attackers banned.
Yeah,
because you're a celebrity. You're Robin Williams' daughter, or you're Leslie Jones. But I think they have a fundamental issue, which is Twitter was created as an anonymous platform. Facebook has issues, but nowhere near this degree of issues, right?
Yeah,
Google Plus, same thing, nowhere near this degree of issues. In fact, Google Plus now lets you use a fake name, and it hasn't descended yet, but it started to. There's a lot more spam. There's a lot more ridiculousness on Google Plus, partly because it's an abandoned platform. The problem I see Twitter facing is they're built around anonymity. I think the verification is an interesting way to kind of slice it so that they can have basically two Twitters now.
Yeah, but have a dark Twitter.
Yeah.
But the verification is, as they've explained it so far, because I covered this week, anyone in the public can apply for it, but they've made it very clear that the
you won't all get it?
You won't all get it.
Oh.
So you'll only get it if you're a public figure.
Or a journalist or something.
Exactly. Oh. So you have to be a public figure. You have to be a celebrity. You have to be like an influencer online. You have to be a YouTube star. You have to be some sort of
public personality. Well, see, I don't want a Twitter where, and this, by the way, everybody can do this. You can look at your notifications feed and say, I only want to see verified tweets. And it's nothing. I don't want a Twitter where it's only celebrities talking at me. Exactly. That's the worst.
And Leslie Jones was verified. You know, she like that didn't protect her at all.
Oh, verification doesn't protect you.
So it's like it's cool they're opening it up to the public, but
they would have to take it a step further, is what I'm saying.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did do one thing earlier this year where if you would report harassment in tweets, you'd have to report them one at a time. Which who the hell could do that if you're getting thousands of these a day? Which, as Steve pointed out, not only celebrities get those, but a lot of women and people of color and just in general. Now you can report, I think it's up to three at a time, which is still like insanely low and difficult.
People or three tweets?
Three tweets. So you can't even report like an account like this person is hateful. You have to report those specific tweets.
Oh, you're reporting tweets now?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So they've got a long, long, long ways to go.
They're really torn. You could see how torn they are. And by the way, I'm torn too because Twitter is a valuable platform, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, invaluable for anonymous communication too. I mean, they credit the Arab Spring, the anonymity.
Anonymity is where this all results from, right? If people have to use their real name, I notice they don't. I mean, Milo Yiannopoulos aside, they're mostly pretty civil.
Yeah,
people like to. Most trolls prefer to do it in the darkness under anonymous names. But you point out, we need some anonymity. Twitter at this point is the last anonymous platform except for Reddit. It's okay. And by the way, guess what? Reddit has similar problems, don't they?
Well, Instagram, and if you've looked at like any woman's account on Instagram, the number of
horrible
things. Although Instagram bad news too.
Do they have better controls? You can block somebody.
You can block entire accounts. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But they can't. If you block them, they can't comment on your picture. That's the difference on Twitter. Anybody can use your at handle, even if you've blocked them.
Yeah.
As long as they have an account, they can at you.
Yeah. But you won't see it.
You can block it so you don't see it.
Right.
But that's like sticking your head in the sand. I'm not seeing all these horrible, abusive tweets. How does that help anything? Everybody else sees them, right? I think they have a structural issue that it's very difficult to solve because unless they're willing to go to turn their back on anonymity, which would then break Twitter in some ways.
It's a unique problem.
It's a unique problem. I don't know how do you guys have ideas? How would you solve it?
Like I said, that filter thing.
Buy Yahoo.
Buy Yahoo.
All right, sell to Google and see what they can do with it. Use their machine learning or something.
Twitter owns Periscope, the live streaming video platform. I hate saying platform, app, service, whatever. And they actually have a feature that they rolled out not long ago where they have essentially like a small jury. So anytime
that's an interesting approach.
Yeah. So let's say I'm hosting a video, Mark leaves a hateful comment and you see it, you can report it. And then randomly selected three other users will see it and then they can vote as to whether it's abusive or not. And if it's decided as abusive, then that person, Mark, in this hypothetical situation, would get kicked out for the rest of that
session.
What it is they would be banned from commenting for like 30 seconds, like they get a warning. And then if it happened again, they get kicked out of that specific session.
Twitter must be experimenting with this. Do you think they're considering moving it?
Well, that's why I bring it up is I think they're this is an issue on Periscope. This is an issue on Twitter. Twitter is their main core product. And I think they might bring some of these ideas over across if it's successful. But I think doing things like that, maybe banning people temporarily, maybe putting them in a kind of situation where they can't interact with that other user. And like you said, if you block someone, maybe not allowing them to even use your at handle. You know, I mean, the whole point of Twitter is that it's kind of a conversation unfolding online in front of everybody, right? And when we have those conversations with people that follow us or with each other, everyone can see it, essentially, unless our accounts are private. Well, if you block someone who's being hateful to you, and if they have examples of and proof of that, you know, why not allow that person to not even be able to send you a message publicly using that at handle? You know, maybe there's
well,
maybe there
I
are
can
ways
tell you
around
that doesn't
things.
Fix it, at least in my experience, because they can still use other people's handles
exactly.
and use your name
exactly
and slime you to other people, which is what they want to do
yeah,
anyway.
But
right?
making this, but if so, so why do trolls at this point really like Twitter a lot more than they like these other platforms, as we brought up and we were talking about? Now, this stuff still happens on Facebook. This stuff still happens on YouTube and all these other places.
It seems to be shut down a lot faster. Well, YouTube's actually
right?
pretty bad.
But so why does it happen on Twitter more? Because it's a lot easier to do and go unchecked on Twitter than anywhere else.
Right.
So if it's more of a pain in the butt to do, and if it's more difficult to do on Twitter, they'll go somewhere else. You're going to go where it's easier to do. You know,
so maybe make it harder to create new accounts. Maybe have a waiting period. You're right. There are ways that they could make
yeah.
it. They don't
never
seem
gonna
to
get
have
rid of
the
it
will.
Altogether.
Yeah.
But you can make it a lot harder
they don't
for
seem
those
to have the
who
will
do it.
To do that, though. Do they? I like the idea of a jury of your presumably peers.
Well, maybe if it goes over well on Periscope, maybe they'll
yeah.
bring it over. Who knows?
I think that's very interesting.
But, whether they're putting enough resources into it or enough attention into it, I think all of us would probably say no. But they are doing something and they are trying to figure something out. Are they moving quick enough? I don't think so, but it's not as if they're ignoring it altogether.
It's such an interesting question because on the one hand, Twitter is a pimple on the butt of the internet. It's a boil. And on the other hand, but at the exact same time, it's also one of the best things that's ever happened on the internet. It's a really interesting. I mean, we just heard a bad rumor that turned out not to be true that a celebrity had passed. What's the first thing you do? I check Twitter. And you know, if somebody's passed, that's where you're going
to
see it.
And we were able mm-hmm. to find out that that was a hoax.
Because thankfully. It wasn't on Twitter.
Yeah.
So that's hugely valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Arab Spring brought down Mubarak in Egypt. I mean, you can't be more valuable than that. I mean, admittedly, Facebook had a role in that in other ways.
The majority of the dialogue happening with the Black Lives Matter movement and
Black Lives Matter
brutality issues is happening
on Twitter. It's the hashtag
on Twitter,
and that makes it visible and viable. And
in a way that Facebook can't even emulate or hope to emulate.
And the Republican candidate for president, Donald Trump, is to some degree the presidential candidate because his mastery of Twitter, not because of his mastery of Facebook, but his mastery of Twitter.
He's not even running ads.
He doesn't need to.
Ads.
He doesn't have to run ads. He's mastered social media.
Specifically Twitter. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. More so than
anything else.
More so than anything else.
Yeah.
Twitter has become a platform for him.
Yeah. He's on Facebook, but it's kind of minimal, feel like. Yeah.
You know, in fact, he's better in 140 characters than he is in 140 words. I mean, there's just something about that medium. Some people are made for that medium. I find that fascinating. So at the same time as Twitter is the worst thing on the internet, it's also the best thing on the internet.
The internet as a whole.
That's the internet.
You know, that's anything. That's money. That's guns. That's politics. All of these things are just tools that are reflections of ourselves and what we make of them. Right. So
Let's take a break. We're going to come back with more. We have a Microsoft quarterly results to report. Google has some numbers on government requests for user data, and a victory for Google in France. The last place you'd expect a victory for Google. First, a word from Braintree. Braintree is the place to go if you are a mobile app developer or a web developer and you want to add payments. Do not try to write this yourself. Use Braintree. Braintree Payments makes it easy to accept any kind of payment, period. Credit cards, PayPal, Venmo, Bitcoin, Apple Pay, Android Pay. When the next big thing comes along, Zubat Pay or Pokemon Pay, that you can bet you go to your control panel on Braintree and there'll be a checkbox. You check it and boom, it's part of your app. And that's amazing. Easy to integrate. Just a few lines of code, iOS, Android, JavaScript. It works in seven languages. The SDK is in seven languages, .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, and Ruby. And of course, before you use something like Braintree, what are you going to do? You're going to check their references. Who uses Braintree? Have you seen the buyable pins on Pinterest? That's Braintree's contextual payment system. Amazing. Have you ever used, have you ever used Uber? You take a ride, you get out, that's it, you're done, you're paid. That's Braintree. And guess what? Lyft uses Braintree too. When you see two competitors using the same service, you know that's got to be the service. Airbnb uses it. Hotels Tonight uses it. For crying out loud, GitHub uses it. You use GitHub, GitHub uses Braintree. Enough said. Go to BraintreePayments.com/twit. Find out more. No late nights, no complicated recoding, no stress about staying ahead of the curve. It reassures your customers, too, that because of the great fraud protection, they feel better. They've used Braintree, too, and they'll feel better. Fewer abandoned carts. You get fast payouts. Braintree, it gives you an easy way to accept multiple payment types and an easy integration into your app. Just a few lines of code and your first $50,000 in payments fee-free. Tell the boss, tell your product manager, whoever makes a decision, maybe it's you, BraintreePayments.com/twit. Do go to that URL because we want Braintree to know you came there because you were watching Twit. BraintreePayments.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. We had a great week, fun week, lots to talk about, and we've made a small motion picture for you to enjoy, recapping the highlights. Watch.
Previously on Twit.
I wish I had a box to take this out of. I don't. This is
that would be a lot of styrofoam.
This
penis.
Is the Model X. Just double tap here. I'll double tip this door. And now watch over here. Famous Falcon Wing door.
I'm so excited about that. I really am.
Twit Live Specials.
Here in the Silicon Valley, the Internet of Things and wearable technologies are two catchphrases. Are we actually going to see a revolution in wearable technology and the Internet of Things? That's why we're here in San Jose for Wearable Tech Conference 2016.
All about Android.
This week we have the flagship Moto Z's. Here is the projector mod. It snaps on perfectly on the back. And Josh, if you want, we could try and see if we can get it with the overhead camera. There we go. There's
me. Look at that. Oh, that's so cool.
The new screensavers.
Michael, along with others, reverse engineered the API to create a map that shows you where Pokemon are anywhere in the world. Please. There's no public API. You just figured out what they were doing?
Right, yeah. This is all reverse engineered.
Boy, are you a little worried that you're going to get a little knock on the door at some point?
We're going against the terms of service, but I don't
can't
think
get thrown in jail for that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun, isn't it?
Of course.
Twit. Test drive one today.
I mean, they'd have to redo. Where's the microphone? I can't. Oh, there it is.
Actually, I'm starting to come to the conclusion that VR is the 3D of 2016. Like, it was overhyped.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Of 2016, yeah. It's not going to take off this year, but it will take off.
Really?
Yeah. PlayStation VR, it's not going to take over the world when it comes out, but give it a couple years.
I'm starting to get the feeling that, like, we were all excited. It was kind of like Pokemon Go. And now it's like, yeah. Yeah, PlayStation VR, that'll be the test.
That's going to be the most accessible. I mean, most people aren't going to buy PCs just for VR. But a lot of people who already have PlayStations,
yeah,
millions of them, might pick up a headset. Yeah, exactly. That could be, you know.
We got the you know, the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive in the back room there. Everybody was all excited. They drew funny things with Tilt Brush and shot at aliens. And do people still go back there and play that? Yeah. I think it's gone. Believe it or not, God, this is such a depressing. But it's run its course. It's over. What's next?
Thank you, Leo. This Friday, July 29th, is the last day you can download Windows 10 for free. So get it or don't, but do not say that we didn't warn you. Guess who's releasing earnings this week? Everybody who's anybody. Twitter, Facebook, Apple, Alphabet, Amazon, Verizon, Google, Nintendo, Match Group, Groupon, and Samsung. We will cover all of this and the rest of the tech news with Jason Howell on Tech News Today every day at 4 p.m. Pacific.
That's what's next. Thank you, Megan Maroney. Tech News Today, Monday through Friday. We just got some really good news. We are going to be, you know how Amazon Echo has that update? You could say, give me my daily briefing. And the choices have been kind of limited. I think Bloomberg might be on it. Wall Street Journal's on it. NPR. It's kind of limited. But we just got invited to provide a tech news headline for the Amazon Echo.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. So I think, I don't know, Megan, Jason, maybe I'll do some of them. I think it'll be kind of cool.
And so it'd just be like you talking for a minute or two.
Yeah. Here's the tech news headlines from twit.tv.
That's awesome.
I'm your host, Leo Lapointe.
Yeah. Can I get you to wake me up in the morning as my alarm? Just you reading headlines?
You want that?
Or are you giving
usually
me a personal
phone
call?
Usually people use me to go to sleep at night. quite the opposite. Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. I guess we called Amazon and they said, well, it's invitation only, but yes, you're invited. Take that, Tesla. Nice. but you still can't get us on a Tesla. Google and Bing, good news. The French court says, and after all, don't we all do exactly what the French court says? The French court says Google and Bing, it's okay to have torrent searches. This is actually kind of a big deal. Is a search engine responsible for providing you a link to what might be pirated content? The filter was requested by the French music industry. The High Court of Paris said that it's too broad, too ineffective, and this is so, boy, I'm surprised to hear them say this, but would target legitimate content as well. Just because it's on torrent,
yep.
Just because it's BitTorrent doesn't mean it's pirated music.
Who would have thought that France would be more progressive on this internet censorship issue than the UK, for example, which still has the right to be forgotten.
Yeah. I hope that the U.S. music industry pays attention to this. Obviously, it doesn't carry any weight in the U.S., mm-hmm. but it would be nice if they kind of... There's always been this kind of thing like, well, shouldn't Google not allow searches for stuff we don't like? Yeah. And I don't think you want to get Google in that position.
No, Yeah, forcing them to censor or making them censor on behalf of, you know, anyone, but much less major corporations, isn't really like a good look. So I'm kind of actually about this.
French courts have used France's intellectual property code, their DMCA, to force Google and Bing to make pirate sites disappear. But in this case, the court said, no, it's just not gonna happen. We're not going to block all torrents just because you say so.
Do you guys think this is maybe a little bit of a recognition that BitTorrent itself, I mean, you know, torrenting is really a type of technology, but BitTorrent, the company behind all this tech, they're trying to go legit. I mean, they have their sync apps to share files. They have their shoot app to share photos. They have Bleep, their messaging app. I mean, they're trying to turn themselves into a legit company, and I think that's an acknowledgement that not all the stuff that's on their service is bad. I think they even have a music service now, which yeah. I forget the name of.
I think this has been Bram Cohen's strategy to kind of resurrect the name.
Yeah.
They launched BitTorrent News this week. In fact, they streamed the Republican National Convention. I think they're going to do the same next week
with the
Democratic National Convention. Did anybody watch BitTorrent live, watch the live stream?
Yeah. My friend was the host.
You're kidding.
Oh, Justin Young. He was one of the hosts.
So
he
they did their own...
Charmander the entire time.
They did their whole coverage, their own coverage.
Yeah, yeah. It was really cool. I mean, it was very offbeat. I mean, he was my buddy was dressed up as Charmander walking the floor.
that was him.
Yeah, yeah. Really old college friend of mine.
That's funny.
He was having a blast, and I can't wait to see him do the DNC. You know, it's kind of offbeat and fun, and definitely caters to the kind of person who would be paying attention to BitTorrent's news network. So. Yeah, it's great. I'm really happy for them.
That was Justin Robert Young.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Of course I know who he is. Wow. Yep. Good for Jerry.
There he is. Yeah.
Good for him.
So he was my editor in chief at my college paper a million years ago.
Well, of course he hosted a show on this network for a long time.
Yep. Yep.
NSFW. Wow. I should have, if I had known Jerry was going to be hosting, I would have watched. That's offbeat. So they, of course, you can get a pool feed of the convention goings on, but it looks like they were doing a lot more than that.
Yeah, they were doing man on the street stuff and just gags and all that kind of thing.
10 to 12 hours of coverage a day during the convention. Are they going to do it again next week? Because that's what I'm watching.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think he's going to be there.
Fantastic. How do you watch it? It's on the internet. You can watch it on the web.
Yeah, I think it's a YouTube channel.
But I think they also have, if I'm not wrong, I think they have an app for Apple TV, right?
I'm not sure.
There is a BitTorrent app for Apple TV. I don't know if that's...
No, I definitely know there's a YouTube channel, and they have like only a couple hundred followers at the time I looked earlier last week. But
yeah, you're right. It's on iOS and Apple TV. Yeah. And their music service, BitTorrent Now.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, they really are reinventing themselves.
Yeah. And on
is BitTorrent Now just like Spotify or...
No, what it is independent artists
it's all
can
indie.
Put... Yeah. They can put stuff up there, and then you can get it from those specific artists if you want. They can make it free. It's pretty neat.
We're the BT Live. We're one of the networks on BT Live.
Okay.
So you could watch Twitch streaming on that. That's also on Apple TV. So they have two apps now.
Yeah.
On Apple TV. And Fire TV. And there's a Mac version. Live streaming video powered by people. I love this. I mean, we used BitTorrent in the very earliest days to distribute the shows because we didn't have bandwidth deals with Cashfly. And we would ask people to watch the show. Well, you want a seed? Okay. Download a copy and you can seed. And we would have seeders. And that's how we got the show out.
That's
always our fallback strategy if we lose our bandwidth deals because it's expensive. Bandwidth's very expensive.
Yeah. I mean, it's good because it's actually useful technology that they have. And, you know, making it more accessible and using it in different ways.
And it's good for them because it's not pirated content.
Exactly. It kind of helps them shield that reputation of just people sharing things that are stolen, you know?
So they don't use... I think that they don't use bandwidth.
It's all peer-to-peer.
Because it's all peer-to-peer. So it costs them nothing in bandwidth. They just create the content. It's interesting they're doing a YouTube Live channel. I mean, that's not exactly using BitTorrent technology, is it?
But it's getting that name out there in a different way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's good for Steve's buddy in the Charmander suit.
I didn't know that was Justin Robert Young.
Yeah.
You couldn't really tell. I saw a beard.
Yeah, there are better shots of him. He was kind of masking himself there. The best one, he's walking the floor just talking to, you know, RNC delegates. It's really
what
funny.
I mean, you know what? A political convention is so wild.
Look normal.
It's like, oh, yeah. You must be one of the dinosaur Trump supporters. It's so funny. Wow. Why not bring Pokemon to the convention? Well, I can't wait to watch him do it tomorrow. Let's see here. Quarterly results. Microsoft Q4 results. It's really, we're watching the transition of this company. It's very interesting. Office 365 subscriptions, 23 million. A very strong quarter thanks to cloud. Their new HR CRM platform, Dynamics, Azure products and services. They made money on the hardware division too, Surface. Not so much on the phone part.
Yeah, that's been in a nosedive.
Not so much there. In fact, they didn't even report phone numbers, which tells me probably...
Bad.
They've been reporting it all along. Yeah, now we're 4%. Now we're 1.5%. I think it's probably close to
they
zero.
They also don't report Xbox sales.
Yeah, they never break that out, do they?
They stopped after...
Yeah, they used to.
They used to.
They used to. They stopped because they're getting their butts kicked by PlayStation.
Rightly so?
I think so.
I love my Xbox One. No?
PS4 is where it's at.
You're both PS4ers? Yep.
I had an Xbox
I'm PS4.
One, but I got rid of it because...
Real gamers are PS4 much. Users, aren't they?
I don't want to get into real gamers and fake gamers. There's just more games that I wanted to play on the PS4 and... You know, outside of Sunset Overdrive,
which is an awesome game.
Which is great.
And funnest then Halo. Game ever.
I wasn't using my Xbox One much, so I got rid of it.
Yeah.
You know?
And, I mean, there's not a qualitative difference.
Most of the games you want are on both.
No.
You know?
No Man's Sky, though. Will that be... That's the one I want.
That's just PS4.
Yeah. No Xbox.
Come to the dark side, Leo.
It's going
to
be great.
Do you like an old Xbox One?
I'll take the Tesla.
You want my Xbox One? All right, Chris, I'm going to give it to you. And the reason I am is because I ordered, stupidly, the new Xbox, which comes out August 2nd, the Xbox One S.
Can we talk about what a ripoff this is? They have the One S coming out this year. They have Project Scorpion, another new Xbox, supposedly Xbox One, coming out next year with even more graphical horsepower for VR. They're trying to sell us a new Xbox every year. I don't like this. I do not like this.
Well, you don't have to buy it.
I'm not gonna.
I mean, still gonna be able to play your games.
$350 every year? Get the hell out of here.
The S is the same. I guess it's
smaller.
It can do 4K.
It can do 4K streaming video, not 4K in games, but it can do 4K Netflix.
Yeah.
But I don't have a 4K TV, so that's a big deal.
Yeah.
It looks way nicer.
It does
it's
look
slimmer.
Nicer.
It's a lot smaller. It's like a third the size.
Yeah, the old Xbox One on my really terrible looking TV console. Looked like a big ass old VCR. I hated that thing.
All right, Chris, I'm going to give you the old Xbox One when the new one comes. You want it? Why don't you have an Xbox One? You're a young person. You have a PlayStation. Son of a... Do you want an Oculus Rift?
Are you giving stuff out? This year, like,
we got
Santa,
move.
Leo,
yeah,
Santa.
Yeah, we
got to
move. Well, I feel like you've been left out. I'm not giving you anything, Steve, because you're in New York.
I'm like Oprah Winfrey today. This is great.
But so here's the problem. I got an Oculus Rift. I bought an Oculus Rift, and then they said, oh, and you're getting one for free because you supported the Kickstarter. So it's in the. Do you have a computer that can run it, though? That's the problem. See, nobody does.
No.
You have to have like this ridiculous machine.
We reported a few months ago that there are more PS4s in the world than there are computers capable of running Oculus.
It was something like only 1% of all PCs.
Yeah, you haven't even taken it out of the box?
No, because...
Oh, my God.
But I can't give it to you because you can't
I
use
would love
it.
To have... Yeah, I don't have the computer.
Take it and sell it on eBay or
I'm
something.
Not giving you
Very
a computer
generous.
Can run it.
Oh, my God.
When's the new studio opening up?
Not long. Less than a month. So, actually, I should mention, this is the 5th anniversary of the day we moved in here.
Oh.
5 years ago today.
Look at that.
You may remember we were in the cottage down the street. We had a parade. Look, John's wearing a shirt that commemorates this date, 7/24/11.
Very cool.
We were way down the street. We had a little parade. Marched up the street to the new studio.
It was everybody carrying like a box?
Yeah, everybody has to carry one box.
Yeah.
And then we moved into the new studio, and we've been here 5 years. Unfortunately, you know, we've been here so long, two restaurants have gone out of business next door. So there's that. But the new restaurant next door decided they want this space to make a brewery. So they want a big vats. So they sold the building to these guys.
That's great.
And we thought, hey, here's an opportunity to, you got to redo the place every once in a while. Things wear out.
Yeah.
So we're moving across town to a smaller, but studio-wise it'd be the same, but it's a little bit smaller facility. We don't need all this room. We don't need a 10,000 square foot basement. Because all that was incentive for staff to sleep down there. We started to find, like, secret, they called it the no-hole. Father Robert and Brian that created like this secret playroom down there. And then I think there was a beanbag down there people were like camping out on. I think Burke was actually living there for a while. So we didn't really illegally, I might add. We didn't really need all the space down there. So
sounds like a good move.
I think just to get the nests out downstairs. We're going to bring a flamethrower in after we move.
Napalm it.
Yeah, just scour it clean. But the new place is nice. So what we're going to do for people who are watching, the last show here will be August 21st. So we're going to do it's going to be a, you know, obviously the transition can't be instantaneous. Well, it is going to be instantaneous, but it's going to be a little tricksy because we have to move everything over there. So we're going to move it piecemeal. We'll have one last, my office will be the last to go. I'll do a radio show in the office on Sunday. The new Screensavers Saturday will be we'll do a special version that we'll record at the new studio. It won't even be done yet, but we'll record it over there. No audience for that, sorry. You can come here to watch the tech guy on the 21st, but at that point, instead of doing Twit here on that Sunday, we have rented a cable car. And I understand we're putting in tracks, but we have a cable car, and we're going to all get in the cable car carrying one. Everybody carries at least one box. We get in the cable car. We drive over to the new place, and we'll do Twit on August 21st from the new studio. So that'll be fun.
That's cool. Why
basically I'm giving everything away.
Yeah.
Because that's one less box we have to carry. So that's the story, Morning Glory. I don't know why I got into that. I can give you a mug.
I'll take a mug.
Okay. We'll give you a mug. How many bobbleheads are left? There's a lot. We bought out the bobblehead market. And I think maybe we have a few too many bobbleheads. Good news for Microsoft, another legal case. Remember, Microsoft had email servers in Ireland. And they went to court saying, we don't want to turn that information over to the U.S. government. It's offshore. Court said, you're right. This, I thought they were going to lose this for sure. I thought they're just fighting it so they look, you know, Microsoft looks like they care, because they do, obviously. So the government, well, this is another court. I'm showing another story, but the government said, yes, that Irish server is off limits. However, it's not all pie and Skittles. The U.S. says there's no legal basis for the government to be required to tell Microsoft customers when it does intercept email.
Which I very much personally do not like this at all.
This is a, you know, there's a kind of encoded in the Constitution is the right to face your accuser.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know which amendment that is. Yeah, go ahead. Give him a bobblehead and a cup. I didn't mean right now in the middle of the show, but okay. There's your parting gift. Congratulations. You don't have to take the bobblehead. You
can, yeah, I don't. That's why I don't have a car. So.
Yeah, you don't need a. Yeah, it's not exactly a plastic Jesus, but anyway, it's terrifying.
Well, you can think highly of yourself. Plastic Jesus.
No, I said it wasn't.
Was it? Oh, okay, got it.
I didn't say it was. He said it was not. Anyway. Throw it away. We don't want it.
Oh, I didn't mean to offend you.
It's okay. You don't have to have it.
Lovely bobblehead.
No, you don't want it either, Nathan. Trust me. No one wants it. That's why we have a surplus. It seemed like a good idea at the time. What is it? You have the right to face your accuser, right?
Yeah. So if the cops want to come search your place, they need a warrant. They need to tell you about it. If you go, you know, to court, someone says you're committing a crime, you have the right to know what that crime is and who's accusing you of it. If someone sues
it's
you,
the Sixth
you
Amendment.
Get to know who's suing you.
Leak tells me in the chat room, it's the Sixth Amendment, quote, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to be confronted with the witnesses against him. Now, if the witness against you is your own email,
mm-hmm.
but it does seem like you should all that it's not specifically laid out, but you should also have the right if somebody's going after you to know that they're going after you. But in fact, the Patriot Act is very clear in this. Not only does Microsoft not have the requirement to notify you, they're not allowed to notify you in many cases. If you get a national security letter,
right.
One of the stipulations is you can't tell anybody that you got this national security letter.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how this plays with that other thing you're talking about with where the
Irish.
Yeah, where the government basically found that if data is being held in servers overseas, in this case in Ireland for Microsoft, that Microsoft doesn't have to give the information on those servers pertaining to users to the government. But as all this is happening, the Obama administration is negotiating with lots of other governments.
Just get the Irish government to do it.
Exactly. So you know, they're all working on these issues. It'll be interesting to see how these overlap because, you know, if someone else's government in Europe or Asia or Africa or something, you know, has to notify you and they're doing it through them, is that going to be a loophole? You know, are there going to be ways to get around these things? So.
So the let's see, was it the Ninth? No, Second Circuit ruled that a warrant issued under a very specific section 2703 of the Stored Communications Act, cannot compel American companies to produce data stored in servers outside the United States. So they ruled that on July 14th.
Yeah,
I could go to the Supreme Court. This is not necessarily definitive, but. By the way, they'd lost all the way up to this point. Microsoft continued appealing it, and won this. This is a from a 2013 case where a New York district judge issued a warrant asking Microsoft to produce all emails associated with an account hosted by Microsoft, even though the emails were stored in Dublin, one of Microsoft's data centers in Dublin. Microsoft did provide the U.S.-based account information, but would refuse to turn the Irish emails over. They lost in court in 2014. They appealed, lost again, and they appealed a third time to the Supreme the Circuit Court and won. We'll see what happens.
It's worth noting that, you know, a lot of times things are intercepted as data is being transmitted, so it's not just about what's on the servers, like all the Snowden NSA right. links and stuff like that. And in those cases, the United States government was working with foreign governments, especially in the UK, to share some of that data back right. and forth. And so it's like, hey, you do some snooping for us, we'll do some snooping for you. Well, yeah. You know,
the government fights all these battles to protect every vehicle they have to obtain information.
They're never
they
going
to
give up on
50 anything. Other yeah, ways exactly. to get this information.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
At least with this one, though, this is about what we get to know about as users. I mean, you know, the secret agencies are always going to be operating in secret. But this here is whether or not we have the right to be told by the companies when the government requests it from them, which is a little different one than they're intercepting it along the way. And so to me, I view this one slightly different and, you know, not everyone would agree, but I think it's important to know just in the same way that if someone wants to search my apartment, they need a warrant. I get to know who's about it. But yeah, we'll see how this all shakes out.
Google's transparency report. This is one of the reasons many companies now are doing these transparency reports, just to at least let you know. They can't tell you personally that you're being investigated, but at least let you know that there are these investigations going on. Government requests for user data, according to Google, hit an all-time high in the second half of 2015. These are governments, not just the U.S. government, governments around the world. 40,677 requests for data. Google, in many cases, fights them as much as they can. That's up 18% from the half year prior to that. So, you know, they're asking. Most of the requests did come from the U.S., 12,523 requests. And by the way, that impacts 27,000 users or accounts, because many of these requests have multiple users, multiple accounts. So we're going in that direction. You know, one of the ways I'm responding to that is more and more I'm investigating ways of keeping my data off the public internet, but using my own private server.
Mm-hmm.
I think for email, I think for I'm looking at replacing the entire Google Cloud. I don't mistrust Google at all, but Google has no ability to fight the federal government
yeah.
anymore.
And like you said, a lot of times they're not even able to tell you, even yeah. if they wanted to, right?
And if you guys want to be on my private server, you can. I'm going to use something called Sandstorm, which is highly encrypted. It'll be on my server in my house. And that's what we're going to use for. And Sandstorm allows you to use add apps. There are a lot of apps. I'm going to replace Evernote, for instance, have a Evernote-like notebook app that is web accessible from any device, including my mobile phones, but encrypted traffic and encrypted storage.
Where are you backing up?
That's a good question. I haven't decided about that. Clearly, backup's going to be important. You can do an encrypted backup. So if you do an encrypted backup, you know, I could store it somewhere like Dropbox that the government had access to it, but at least they would have access to is
the encrypted files.
My encrypted files.
Yeah.
So I'm installing this later this week. It's as much of an experiment as anything else. Can I replace commercial clouds with a private cloud?
Yeah.
It looks like I can. I mean, they have email servers. It's all plug and play. They have Dropbox style file servers. It's really an interesting open source project called Sandstorm. Sandstorm.
I'm excited.
Easy to set up.
Very easy. You need a Linux server. They have a setup script, and you're pretty much done. I'm gonna. You can use them for Dyn DNS because most people don't have a static address in their house, so it may float around. I actually have Comcast Business Class service, so I have a static address. You can also use them. And their certificates to do HTTPS, although I'm going to buy, by the way, not a small cost. It's several hundred bucks a year. You need a wildcard SSL cert for your site. But I think, you know, again, it's an experiment. It'll be, I think, an interesting experiment. They have a lot of apps. Apps are easily ported to it. And word processing, spreadsheets, drawing, like I said, Evernote. They've got some games, CRM. You could do a lot of stuff there. You could have your self-hosted Git or Mercurial repositories, wikis, websites. Quite a complete thing. I think it's very, very intriguing.
Looking forward to seeing what your thoughts are once you've actually
tried
it.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be our family server. So invite my friends and family to participate. Let's see, what else? I'm going to take a break, and we'll come back. We'll have some of the final thoughts, including the case of the cute internet star who wants your password. This is a... Did you read about this?
I haven't read the story yet. No.
It is a fascinating publicity stunt. And I'll tell you more about it in just a second. But first, a word from our sponsor, Audible.com. Audiobooks are my lifeblood. If I discovered Audible in 2000. I actually started listening to audiobooks even earlier. It used to be you'd get a box of cassettes, like 30 cassettes, and you'd have 1 month to listen. And if a cassette jammed, oh, you'd have to send it back and wait. And then Audible came along. Digital downloads? Wow, what an idea. This was before the iPod even. They had their own audio player. And, man, Audible has grown by leaps and bounds. More than 250,000 downloadable titles. Books, but also performances, periodicals, all sorts of stuff. Of course, all the bestsellers now come out in audiobook form on Audible.com. They offer foreign language instruction. The Pimsleur series, for instance, normally very expensive. You could have that. Foreign language audiobooks as well if you want to study a language. They've got the great courses now. Great, the best college professors teaching everything from physics to game theory to history. It is the ultimate resource for audio, and I want you to get 2 credits, which will give you 2 books for free right now. You go to audible.com/twit2. The only challenge is picking 2, but I think you'll be able to find something. Great science fiction, both classics and modern sci-fi. I'm listening right now to a really fun time travel. I like time travel. I don't know why. Connie Willis's Doomsday book. Just finished the Elon Musk book by Ashley Vance. Fascinating story. The Steve Jobs biography. Several Steve Jobs biographies are on there. Dan Lyons' hysterical book about his life in a startup, Disrupted. He reads it. I love Dan. It's all on Audible. So pick 2 books. Go to audible.com/twit2. You'll be signing up for... There is Disrupted. You'll be signing up for the Platinum plan. That's 2 books a month. You also get the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. So you can listen to Nate's stories every day. Now, the key thing here is this is a 30-day free trial. So you have 30 days, no cost to you. Cancel any time. In that first 30 days, you'll pay nothing. You're going to get to keep those 2 books. So pick something fun. Pick something you're going to enjoy. Oh, Moneyball. What a great book that was. I love, you know what, any Michael Lewis book would be awesome. He's just one of my favorite authors. He writes nonfiction, started writing about the stock market. His book on robo-trading and flash trading, it's called Flash Boys, a real eye-opener. John Hodgman's got his books on there too. Audible.com/twit2. 2 books free, offer good in the U.S. and Canada. And if you're not in the U.S. or Canada, you should still try Audible. They're all over the world. Audible.com/twit2. We thank Audible. They've been supporting this show for before we moved, I think almost a decade now. This is a weird story about, and I don't know who he is, Jack Johnson. He's a Vine star, I guess, and a performer. He last week he told his 4 million Twitter followers, 4 million, not bad.
Yeah.
Send me your password to your Twitter account. Tens of thousands of fans did. And by the way, hashtag hacked by Johnson. And then what he did is he would post a personal message on your Twitter feed as if you did it. A video, a song. This is brilliant. This is like... using Twitter in an amazing way. What amazes me is that these young people gave him their password, but they obviously trust him. Here's an example of a video he sent one young fan. Let me see if I can. He said, "This song is for you." Now, how much would you pay? Would you give him your password to get a personal song played just for you?
Nah.
I don't know who this guy is.
Yeah, you got to be one of his fans. You gotta
must not be his target demographic.
No, the power the power of Vine is amazing. I mean, these Vine stars are
so were huge. People DMing him, or were they doing this publicly?
No, they'd say, oh, I hope they were DMing him. Like, they would send the password. And then what he would do is he would go into your account and he'd read your tweets. He'd learn something about you to do a personalized video. Like one fan, he said, our picture in your icon is cute as hell. He changed her icon to him and her. This person sent her password to him at least 50 times until a mysterious new video popped up in her account. 16 seconds of Mr. Johnson. I love how the New York Times calls him Mr. Johnson. Sitting at the keyboard, he said, we just saw it. What's good, T? I just wrote this one for you. Now, she knows that that actually is not an original song because she saw it on Instagram the night before, but she still got, you know, a little something. Should I start doing this? He is awfully cute. Here, you want to watch another one? You got to be 12. You got to be 12.
Braylee, what's good, baby? How you doing?
Oh, my God.
Your icon is cute as
hell. Oh, my God.
What was that? Was that Cleveland? I don't know. But anyways, we look good. Damn, we could be a couple, maybe. But seriously, I hope your summer's going great. I hope everything's going great in life.
Well, you know.
This is called retail fan cultivation, right?
Yeah, he's reaching out to his fans. I mean, if his fans are.
It's authentic. It's real.
Yeah. I mean, that takes a lot of time. It's kind of surprising that he put the effort into doing that for people. But, you know, word of mouth, amazing. I'm sure it's blowing things up.
Amazing.
You know, reverberating across the interwebs.
SoftBank buys Arm, $32 billion. Actually, we talked about that last week, didn't we? I can't remember. It happened last Sunday. No?
Yeah. I wonder how Intel feels about that.
Oh, man. Intel's just got it. Burn!
Huge deal.
Intel's just got to be scared. I don't think SoftBank. I think this is more of an investment. They say they're not going to move ARM out of Britain. They're going to let the staff stay.
You got a good thing going. That makes sense.
Yeah. Why not?
That's usually how SoftBank operates. They don't right. get. They don't intervene too much. Right. Like when with Alibaba, they right. mostly left them alone.
They own Sprint. What they do is they give them cash. They yeah. say, here, do what you're doing. You're going to. And man, what? I mean, I admit $32 billion is not a small amount of money.
No.
But you're buying the future. You're buying every smartphone yeah. uses an ARM chip.
And they're betting on the Internet of Things. That's a
and
big
IoT.
Part of it.
Huge. It's cash, by the way. Must be nice.
Yeah.
You might kind of wonder at this point, maybe Apple should have done this. They have the cash to do it. And it is, by the way, overseas money, which Apple always looking at. Apple can't spend all that money it has in the U.S. because most of it's offshore, but they could have bought an English company.
Yeah, they just made that billion-dollar investment in Didi.
Right, the new Uber of China, right?
That's right. So they're looking to put some of that money to work.
Apple is going to make – okay, we talked about Pokemon Go. I don't know if there's a new angle. This is a new angle. Apple, of course – is anytime you buy anything, any in-app purchase for Pokemon Go, Apple gets a third of it. They stand, according to GSM Arena or somebody, they stand to make as much as three, actually it's a banking firm, Needham & Company, analyst there says, $3 billion in revenue from Pokemon Go over the next year or two.
I'm skeptical about that number.
Well,
I mean,
do you think it's going to die out before then? Is that why, Steve?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Apple did confirm this week that it is the most popular or most downloaded app in its first week in App Store history. And keep in mind, it was only available in two countries that first week. US, New Zealand, and Australia. So, I mean, use that. But I don't know. I feel like this is going to die out before they can generate that much revenue.
Clearly, it's not going to maintain this velocity. But this game has some staying power. People played Ingress. Many people continue to play Ingress, yeah. and that was a much less accessible game with very similar mechanics. Right. I could see this going for a while. I've never seen you. Have you ever seen anything like this?
No, not in years.
You know, there's the Candy Crushes and the
difference is people have to go out to play this, so we don't know. You know, people are playing Candy Crush inside. You don't see mobs.
Yeah,
They just opened in Japan on Friday.
Big deal.
And big money deal, too, because McDonald's made a deal. This is where you're going to make the big money of Pokemon Go. McDonald's outlets will be Pokestops.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're a small business, you put a lure on a you're starting to see this. Starbucks and others put lures on Pokestops nearby. Come on by, have a cup of coffee, and catch some Pokemon. You're seeing it everywhere.
Yeah, we did a we talked to a bunch of small businesses, some of which like did this same strategy of buying lures for Pokestops. One pizza shop in Brooklyn said they spent $10 on lures and sales increased 30% over one weekend.
I mean, it has to be something that people who are playing Pokemon would, let's get a slice kind of thing, right? You're not going to sell refrigerators that way. Yeah.
But if you're out there, you know, wandering around catching Pokemon, you might get hungry. You might get thirsty. I guess it makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's a big upside to Pokemon Go. It made Pokemon, which, by the way, the Nintendo doesn't have anything to do with this, really. They just own
Part of the Pokemon company.
One-third of the Pokemon
company. They own a third of the Pokemon company. They invested in Niantic when they spun off from Google. So Google's a shareholder, Nintendo and Pokemon. Too.
But it doubled Nintendo's share price, made them more valuable than Sony.
Yeah.
Holy
cow.
Didn't
Nintendo say this week that they're not going to... I mean, they came out and admitted ahead of earnings that they're not going to make much money if... anything off of this?
You know why? I think that's true.
Like, hey guys, just to clarify, like, you guys are getting geeked out over this for nothing, investors. Like, I'm not sure
that the investors are doing this wholly based on the expectation of this game generating a lot of money, but it's a very recent thing, like a year ago, that Nintendo said we're going to finally do mobile and have smartphone games, and I think this is like the first indication that Nintendo's intellectual property is extremely valuable and will translate to mobile. And so I think investors to some extent are betting on, you know, when they do this for Mario and Zelda and some of their other properties, that it could have a similar effect.
Yeah, hopefully they do that, because right now the only games that are confirmed are like Animal Crossing and Fire Emblem, which are pretty niche. Oh, and then they have the Mii thing that you build your own Mii character. Yeah. But so they don't have the Marios and Zeldas out there yet. So hopefully that comes soon and we can see what it looks like.
It validates that the intellectual property of Pokemon is valuable.
Yeah.
And that
by
itself. I mean, even if they're not reaping the value today, that shows that at least Nintendo is not a shell. There's something there.
Yeah, well, there's a ton of nostalgia to tap into. Right. There's, you know, cross-generational fans. Yeah. You know, a lot of people grew up with Nintendo properties. You know, Pokemon, Mario, all that good stuff. Yeah. So it makes a ton of sense. And, you know, with the way, you know, Hollywood's going and everything, they want to tap into franchises. They want to make films. They want to do
TV
shows.
They just sold the rights to a Pokemon movie, to Legendary.
There you go.
It's not going to
end. Live action. It's a live action.
It's live action?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe Justin Robert Young could star as Charmander.
There you go.
Justin Robert Young is Charmander. Oliver Stone was at Comic-Con to promote his new movie about Snowden, which will come out this fall. He says Pokemon Go is a slippery slope to totalitarianism. I know some old farts who believe the same thing. He says it's surveillance capitalism. It's not funny, he says. It's the latest sign of an emerging phenomenon in which citizens willingly surrender their privacy to corporations, which then profit out of it. You'll see I should do this in some sort of curmudgeonly voice. You'll see a new form of, frankly, a robot society, Stone said. I call it totalitarianism. All right.
I mean, well, you know, chill, corporations dude. Making money off of people's, you know, private data. Well, that's what Google, Facebook,
the internet.
Everybody does. That's kind of the entire thing.
Yeah.
I mean, he might be, you know, on one bleeding edge with his viewpoint, but he's not entirely wrong per se.
You can have my Pokemon Go and you pry it out of my cold dead fingers.
and you know, sure enough, when Pokemon Go first came out for iOS, they're asking for access to people's entire Google accounts, which they patched up about a week after.
Yeah, they weren't doing anything
with that.
It was a mistake, but it just shows how much people will give away, not even knowing, because they want to play the hot new thing. You know?
What are you giving away? Your location. Big deal. What are they going to do with that? You worried?
Sell you slices of pizza in this case?
Yeah. Sounds like a good deal for me. I'll take it. No, I understand. I completely understand people's concern about that.
Well, if they had access.
But most of the things that are interesting and new about the internet are going to involve some degree you giving up some information. Yeah. Whether it's the Internet of Things, Siri or Cortana or Google Now, you're going to have to give some companies some information. That's why Apple is so challenged to figure out how they can compete with Google and Microsoft and other companies, because they say, well, we're going to protect your privacy, but that means they can't do Google Now, right?
Yeah, their services can do a lot less because they know less about you. Yeah. And that is simply the trade-off. I mean, part of the reason why Google is so useful at telling you when your package is coming or when your next flight is or you know, making a prediction on where you want to go next in Google Maps is because they keep track on all of those things, like where you go and where you might want to go next.
I understand people's concern. And really what the best thing to do would be a way to some sort of explicit way to say, well, I'll give you this if you give me that. But I think it is implicit. If you use Google Now, the implicit trade is I'm going to give you information for something useful. Yeah. It maybe should be made more explicit. Maybe there's a dollar value to it. I don't know. But
for me, this goes back to when you give a company like Google or you give Facebook that information, you're getting a trade for that service. Some people fully understand what they're giving away. Some don't.
Right.
But that's the transaction. And then we get into those issues of the government asking companies for all of that data and then using that in different ways that people don't necessarily think about.
As soon as I can do my Pokemon Go home server, I'm going to do it.
There you go.
Yeah, my encrypted Pokemon Go home server. A couple of quick stories. It's not the Dollar Shave Club anymore. It's the Billion Dollar Shave Club. Unilever buying Dollar Shave Club for $1 billion. Nice work if you can get it.
Does anyone think they overpaid? I mean, they're doing like a couple hundred million in revenue.
Yeah, they way
some like 40 million subscribers.
I loved what Ben Thompson wrote about it. You probably read it, Leo. Did you read his post on?
No, tell me about it. On Strategery, I mean?
Strategery
is H's new site. Yeah. Strategery? What did he say?
Yeah. Basically, you know, they created this environment where people were buying Dollar Shave Club razors and not Unilever razors. So Unilever had to pay what they needed to pay to get it.
Get them out of the business, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Unilever, Procter & Gamble owns Gillette. Does Unilever own Schick?
They don't.
No, they don't own anybody.
But they own like Old Spice and Axe and a bunch of like these cool, you know, young guy brands. Right. So, yeah.
So now they're getting in the shaver market.
Are you old enough to think Axe smells like crap yet?
No, yes. Unfortunately. Okay,
just checking. I think it's an age thing. I think you hit an age, 25, 26, where you realize that stuff smells horrible.
It smells like bug spray.
Okay, you're old enough, obviously, but Nate.
Well, for the body wash, but for my cologne, I like Acqua Di Gio. So,
you smell good.
Yeah. So
Acqua Di Gio, what's that?
It's something expensive at Nordstrom that I think smells really good. But not Axe. Not Axe.
Oh, you're saying the body wash. Smell good.
The body wash, though, is pretty...
Smells good?
Yeah.
My son still wears Axe. I don't understand it. I go, what are you wearing?
You know what? If you're in high school and, you got a $10 an hour job or maybe nothing at all, then...
It's cheap.
You want to smell fresh?
It keeps you insect-free?
Win-win.
No bugs on you, my friend. No flies on you. Hey. Opera sold to a Chinese company for $600 million. And the last VCR was manufactured this week. Goodbye, VHS tapes, wherever you are. Do we not still have a VHS rental store down the street here? It's Silver Screen Video, right? Oh, they've gone to DVD. Even Silver Screen Video went to DVD. All right. Until recently, you could rent a VHS tape there.
Do you guys think that VHS will ever come back the way that vinyl records and cassettes?
No.
I mean, cassettes are kind
no
of a hot thing in music right
for
now.
VHS.
You don't think so?
Are they?
Well, because there was a new video that I think I can't remember who it was, but there's like a new music video that's done like in a VHS style. So it's like, you know, a box and it has like the kind of messed up colors, and I mean, you know, there's probably not, but there's some of it there.
It's an Instagram filter.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if you saw Bernie Sanders tweeting during the Republican National Convention, but a number of people noted that not only
was that was great.
Bernie's got...
Oh, he's got a combo VCR. Yeah,
and there's a tape in it.
Yeah, Bernie.
But,
there you go.
But come on, let's face it. Bernie's the kind of guy you'd expect to have a VCR with a tape in it. It's good technology. It still works. I'm not throwing it out.
You know, I was just streaming an episode of Rick and Morty yesterday.
There you go.
And Hulu started buffering on it, and it froze on me. And I was just sitting there thinking, it reminded me of when I had to, like, rewind the VHS tapes. I'm like, why can nothing work? Like, this is the same problem I had with VHS tapes. This is the same issue of, like, disc skipping and, like, freezing on me. Now I'm sitting here and watching streaming, which is supposed to be the answer. And
it's not better.
Hulu freezes on me. We can't build anything that works.
We're out of time. I would love to talk about Kickass Torrents, a site shut down with help from a lot of companies you know and love, like Apple. Federal government moved in. Actually, where were they located? Where was Kickass located? In Europe, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, it was the U.S. rights holders that managed to shut down the largest BitTorrent site in the world. But you know what? You could shut them down. They shut down Pirate Bay, put them in jail.
A new one will pop up.
I think Kickass was back within a day on some other server somewhere else. So, I think we're done. You guys have been very patient.
Was that all the week in tech?
No, my God, we have so much more. But I think we just ran out of time. I mean, I can't keep you more than 2.5 hours. It's like I think there's a rule. I think it violates the Geneva Convention.
I've got nowhere to go, Leo. Didn't you say you have a cot downstairs?
He's waiting for something better than an Oculus Rift.
Mark's moving into the basement.
A bobblehead. I keep trying to entice him with blandishments. That's Mark Millian. You'll find him at Bloomberg Business Week, Bloomberg.com/tech, and he's on the Twitter at Mark Millian. I've known him since he was knee-high to a grasshopper. Actually, how old were you when you started on this show when you were 21, 22? Pretty young, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You were probably at LA 22, Times still.
Yeah, yeah, LA Times.
The kid. Back at the cottage.
That's right, the cottage.
My, how you've grown, Mark.
They grow up so fast. Nate Olivares, Giles, great to have you from the Wall Street Journal. What are you covering these days?
Consumer tech.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so, you know, if there's any gadget and app news or reviews, I'm doing those, but also looking at a lot of privacy issues and kind of trying to help you avoid those pitfalls. So take a look at WSJD, and you'll always see good stuff on there.
Love it.
Yep.
And you're Nate OG, the old school Nate on the Twitter.
That's
Nate
me.
OG.
Yep.
Great to have Stephen Kovac as well. Steve, you're fun, great guy, senior correspondent, techinsider.io, at Stephen Kovac, K-O-V-A-C-H. Steve Kovac, I'm sorry, K-O-V-A-C-H.
Either or.
Either or, you got them both? You got them both?
You can call me whatever.
You got them all?
Oh, no. You can call me Stephen, I mean.
I know, but I think at Nero is available now, in case you want.
I should just grab that, yeah.
Grab it. It's the only reason I don't leave Twitter is I'm afraid somebody will take my handle and do something nasty with it. So I'm just going to stay there. I don't care what you say. Thank you all for being here. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Sunday night, if you're in Europe, 2200 UTC. Please join us. We love it when you watch live or visit in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. But, of course, we don't require that. We're on demand everywhere. Start at twit.tv, our website. That's where all of our shows begin, unless you're driving a Tesla, in which case use iTunes or Stitcher or Slacker or Google Podcasts. We're everywhere. And subscribe. Make sure you don't miss an episode. If you want to be in the studio, and as I said, it's going to be a little tricky on the weekend of August 20th and 21st, but if you want to be in the studio before then, come see your brick. Tickets at twit.tv. After then, come see the new studio. Same address, tickets at twit.tv. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can.
This is amazing.
Doing the Twit.